estate services, the Varsley and Boom1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 365. That's a guess. Now, I'm going to introduce the others before I find my quote, because things haven't got quite right today. We're going to go with Mary Lang first.
Okay, I'm not used to going first.
Ooh, that's what she said.
You may be a doctor, but I am the doctor. The original, you might say.
Right, I'm going to do my quote now before anybody else nicks it. If I hear any more language like that from you, young lady, you're in for a jolly good smacked bottom. That's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
And what's your quote then, Adam?
Shut up. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
You trying to be funny?
Most of the time, yes. And Andy Nunny.
It's far from being all over.
And he's back. And front and sides too. And it'd be nice if he could come back a bit more often. It's Rhys Parton.
And don't eat pears, everyone.
Yeah. Talk about an obscure throwback there.
Yeah.
Because that's only available on a DVD extra.
Wow. Yeah. Is it really? Stephen Moffat is a fanboy.
By the way, everybody, this is our Christmas special.
Happy Christmas.
And Merry Christmas, everyone. And before we embark on our little review, we're going to find out what everybody got for Christmas.
Lord bless us, everyone.
Indeed. So what did you get for Christmas then, Andy?
Well, we buy each other season tickets for the Guildford Shakespeare Company, so we do all the plays for that. That's the main thing we buy each other. I got Johnny Bear's autobiography. I got The Carpet People on the CD. Mm-hmm. I got... what else did I get?
I don't know.
I didn't get anything Doctor Who related this year, which is quite surprising. I got a book about personal relationships who have helped me be... I'm now a helper at the local junior church. And I got the love of my wife and son, so I think that's a wonderful
thing. No, it's not too bad then. No. Mary, what did you get?
We went for comfort this year.
I was
given a sweatshirt of my favorite basketball team. I was given TARDIS sweatpants.
Mm-hmm. Did you say TARDIS pants? Then I think I was blindly.
I got one of those DNA kits that it's called 23andMe. So I'm going to find out what my my ancestry is.
Oh, cool. I want one of them. I'm hoping to get one of them for my next birthday. They reduced the price of them recently, but still. It's awkward for Christmas because you obviously can't really have it as a Christmas present. You have to wait a couple of months for the results to come through. So.
Well, yeah, but just somebody else paying for it and you getting to do it is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, anybody else? Rhys, what did you get?
Well, not much Doctor Who related, other than a Merry Christmas wish from Russell T. Davies.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and of course the episode, but we all got that. My gifts actually came a little bit before Christmas because I had some organizing behind them, but my parents helped me get a new car because I needed a new car.
That's nice.
And they also gifted me a solid-state hard drive and some extra RAM for my laptop. So now it's working really quickly, and I'm really happy about that because I'm hoping to get into some photography and video production next year, and now my computer can actually handle that.
You definitely need RAM for that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Kirby, what did you get?
Main thing I got was a new sound bar for underneath the big TV that I won earlier this year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic.
So I have really nice sound down here in the geek room.
Cool. I'm going to mention something about that later on.
I didn't get any Doctor Who stuff.
I didn't get any Doctor Who stuff per se, but I did get a very nice long black winter coat, which is sort of in the style of a doctor. Not a specific doctor, just a sort of doctorish thing.
Well, a bit like the Jack one.
The what, sorry?
Bit like one that Jack used to wear.
Yeah, not quite as long as that, but it's long and it looks good with the long scarf and mid doctory badges on the lapels. And it just.
Hey, what are we all talking about? We all got a new doctor this Christmas. That's a good present.
Yeah, let's do that.
Absolutely.
Hang on, I'm still saying what I got for Christmas. I got a lovely Amazon Echo Plus, which I'm rather pleased with. It's very big and it does all sorts of different things. And if we had video on at the moment, I'll be able to prove to you that. But actually, the viewers will be able to see this. So I'll have to say, Alexa, turn the light off.
Hey, who turned out the light?
Isn't that cool?
Oh, excellent, yeah.
Alexa, turn the light back on.
Sorry, I didn't.
I didn't say it right. Yes. Alexa, turn the light on. There we go.
Okay. So,
the viewers would have seen the benefit of that. I can also turn the fire on and off with it as well, but it's cold.
Yeah, I can do the same thing. However, I've named this room the dungeon.
Well, you can turn Adam's fire on and off.
Well, I can turn it on.
Computer.
Oh, God, here we go.
Computer, turn off dungeon.
Sorry, the thought of dungeon, I'm sorry, but I've got a completely different view in a dungeon. It's like
and there's no visual for that.
Thank God for that, yes.
Right, computer. Anyway.
Turn on dungeon.
Genius. Ooh, right, nice. Then. And also, obviously, that's my favourite present. I do love my Amazon Echo. It's a very, especially the fact now it plays music and it sounds really good, and I don't have to connect it to a separate speaker and stuff like that. Although to do the podcast, I still need to use the old speaker set so the viewers can hear what you lot are saying, the poor sods. What else did we get? Alicia got Deb and I some sort of meal on a river in Windsor. Which is a bit of a shame because that means we have to drive to Windsor, but hey, it's a nice prezi. God knows when we're going to do it because we're going to be very busy next year, but it's still quite a nice present. She seems to like gifts of activities and stuff like that, so she'll give most of her family things like that. What else did we get? Debbie got me a very nice little watch, which was reminiscent of the Doctor's little fob watch, which is
I saw it online.
Yeah, I saw that online.
We also got I've got some bottles of sherry and I've got a nice bottle of Jack Daniels from my mum. Or was it my mother-in-law? From my mother-in-law, yes. The thing that I can only think of about this me Amazon Echo, because that's the thing I'm having the most fun with at the moment. I did get a few other things. I'll remember them as the show goes on. Have we missed anybody yet in regards to who I've asked about Christmas presents?
Matthew, what did you get?
Yes. Right, so Debbie Melrose has found other things to do tonight, so she won't be on the show.
Yeah, she's seen The Last Jedi.
Yeah, well, I saw that the other day, so I mean, there's a better to spoke about it on the last show, so
I haven't seen it yet, so no spoilers. I've not seen it yet.
Right then, so we're Luke here.
Skywalker's in it.
We're here to talk about and review Twice Upon a Time, the last Doctor Who story to feature Peter Capaldi. As the main actor in Doctor Who.
Quite right, actually. It might be for now, quite right.
As the main actor in Doctor Who. So, the story begins rather beautifully, in fact, with a sort of recap on the 10th planet and using the actual footage from the 10th planet. And they do a rather nice little face merge of Hartnell into Bradley, which I think is rather beautiful.
And apparently his teeth grew in.
Yeah, his teeth grew in as well.
He was regenerating. They were restoring
him. Yeah, that's what they said. It was the reason why his face didn't look quite right is because he was in mid-regeneration. Of course, that doesn't explain why Polly and Ben didn't look quite right, but we'll forgive that.
I was disappointed because I wish there had been a little more with Polly and Ben.
Mm. Yeah, I think that was enough. Of course, you're not really looking at Polly and Ben to that degree, just looking at the scenery that they've recreated and the scenes that we've already seen from 10th Planet these pre-regeneration bits. And I always thought when I watched the 10th Planet that it was a bit curious as the Doctor wanders out and then suddenly he's lying on the floor of the TARDIS, essentially, and there is that gap.
So now we know what happened.
Exactly, and I like that. That's one aspect I really do like about this story.
You know what I liked? I liked the very first thing we saw. It said 709 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, just to butt in, I just copy on screen, the Christmas Day viewing figures, Doctor Who was fifth with 5.7 million viewers, 29% of the overall viewing population, whatever the word is. It was only... the top one was 6.8 million. So actually 5.7 million is actually pretty good. And people were saying, viewing figures are going down. That's actually pretty good.
Well, it's pretty good, but I'm thinking the figures will go up anyway with people watching it on iPlayer and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they say
you found it hard to judge at Christmas because usually so many people are united, they're all watching on one screen as opposed to all their individual screens yeah. that they'd have in their own
yeah,
houses.
Yeah, exactly.
We well, had that all... doesn't include me, that 29%, because I watched it later.
We had six people in the room watching it on RF.
But it beat Coronation Street, and it beat The Queen as well. Well, that's,
oh, poor thing.
Yeah. Her Majesty can't take that sort of nonsense. No, it's yeah. So yeah, we will do well. It was a regeneration episode that even people that aren't Doctor Who fans tend to sort of gravitate towards regeneration stories, for obvious reasons. But yeah, so then we had see the interaction between the two Doctors that we saw at the end of the last episode, but obviously and banter and chemistry is there. Rather beautifully between Capaldi and Bradley, and then Mark Gatiss turns up, dressed as a soldier. So then we have a recap after the title sequence. We have a recap of how Mark Gatiss ended up in the South Pole, with a rather sort of tense scene with him and some soldier pointing a gun at each other.
Yes, that scene actually put to rest some fears that I had because I thought, oh, here we go. We're putting Mark Gatiss in a uniform and he's going to be Mark Gatiss. But he did such a beautiful job. I thought it would be a bit of stunt casting like in Wedding of River Song where he played that guy in prosthetics and he, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Master?
Yes?
By the way, what he said in German was, just leave me here. I do not want to kill you. Please go.
Oh, cool. It's more or less what the captain was saying then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this strange sort of allegedly glass figure appears. I didn't look, it look glass to me. It sort of looked sort of, I don't know.
Computery.
Very good, Kirby. Uh-oh. Hang on, where's my dinger gone?
Alexa.
I like that one. That's
Alexa
a perfect...
Alexa responded because I said computer.
Yeah, well, don't keep saying computery then. Yeah, but no, it's, that was a great
computer,
description.
Cancel.
Shut up, Kirby. Right. See, Reese, things haven't changed. So, yeah, so...
I'm still in the basement.
So, the captain gets grabbed, because they seem to miss him in the time freeze thing. Then he gets rejected by the ship and gets dumped at the South Pole, where all the snowflakes are hanging midair. That's so cool.
I mean, it would be, but the South Pole would be rather cool.
That's very good.
Yes.
Very good, Andy. Very good. You coming in or not? Sorry, magic's just come in for a quiver.
Don't flap your ears.
I might be seeing this in the movie theater tomorrow night, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it looks on the big screen.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Do we know if they filmed this one in 3D?
No, I don't think so.
No, BBC have given up on 3D.
That's true.
He's flopped completely.
Right, Magic's in and he's up to his old tricks again, everyone.
Let Magic's
flapping his ears.
No, he's just trying to get onto my lap and clamber around all the electronics that are underneath my desk because he's doing what he does every time we record now. I think it's Kirby's voice he doesn't like.
He's probably looking for the people that are underneath your computer.
Probably, yeah.
is that a real fire behind you?
Me?
Yes.
You're on fire, Adam.
Where?
All I can see is a picture of Adam with two fingers and a Dalek.
It's my electronic faux fire. It's a faux fire, isn't it?
It's a faux fire, okay. Yes.
Well, in fact, there's a baby in front of Adam's ear.
Hey, watch, I can prove this for the viewers. Alexa, turn the fire off.
Okay.
I have the power. Alexa, turn the fire on.
Okay.
There we go. Magic! No, it's not you, Magic. Can we go back to the story, please? Anyway, so this glass figure appears while the captain sort of introduces the doctors and wants a doctor, funny enough. So they leg it into the nearest available TARDIS, which is the 12th Doctor's TARDIS, much to the shock of the first Doctor. Which
great scene.
Yeah. It might be in for a surprise.
I think this is the best scene in the whole story.
Yeah. Yes. I also like the constant sort of references to the sexism of the early 60s as well, which is quite funny. You can't say that. And yeah, so the Doctor also has a special hiding place for brandy. This is the first time we've heard of this for a while, at least.
Yeah, I thought the Doctor didn't drink alcohol. I mean, because he spat the wine out. Matt Smith.
That's
wine.
Matt Smith only.
Because it's wine.
Yeah, Matt Smith only. Because
lovely stuff, wine.
I think all the other Doctors have.
We've had this discussion before. The third Doctor or the fourth Doctor.
I heard the fourth Doctor drinking wine. And the third Doctor.
Yeah.
Of course, the first Doctor was a smoker, wasn't he?
He was.
Matthew's ready by the looks of things.
Good. Tell him about time too. Oh no, I can tell him myself. Right, let's see if we can able to add him on. All right, hang on. Add people.
About time, just like Doctor Who.
That'll come in handy for you later, Rhys.
We're not doing camera, Matthew.
Tell him. You're on. Sorry, I was about to add you, and you're there. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Yes, welcome. Right.
Hi, Matthew.
We have started, so I will now allow you to do your. What they call it? Quote, if you say.
Quote, that's the word you're looking for there.
Yes, the quote.
Oh.
While you're going, ladies and gentlemen, it's Matthew Kressel.
Yo!
Yay!
Oh, brilliant.
No, it wasn't in it, was it? Oh, it was! Yes, well done. Yes, well done, Matthew.
It was
in it, sorry.
Yes.
Yes, hello, Matthew, how are you?
I wonder who.
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing just fine, thank you. Apologies for being late. I must have got the time zones wrong because I thought we weren't recording till 2 o'clock my time. So.
Yeah, just say Kirby told you the wrong time, that's all you got to say.
I didn't tell him any time, but it's a mistake that we here in the South make.
Yes. So what did you get for Christmas then, Matthew, before we move back to the episode?
Not much in terms of Doctor Who stuff. I got certainly enough books to keep me occupied for a while. The only Doctor Who thing I got directly was a TARDIS tea kettle, believe it or not.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
Or hot, I should say. Not cool, obviously. That would be.
Yeah, I don't think any of us got much in the way of Doctor Who stuff this year.
No.
Wonder why.
We got a new Doctor, though.
Yes, we did.
Anyway,
I'm saving my money for getting some autographs at a couple of conventions this coming year.
Okay.
Particularly
serious saving.
They're expensive, aren't they, autographs?
Friend of the show, Louise Jameson.
Excellent. I bet she won't remember us, so don't worry. Right, so I'm just going to recap with Matthew what we've done so far. We've done all the bits where we had the doctors meeting up, and Ben and Polly, and the captain's now turned up. And so they've ran into the TARDIS now because they're scared of the glass creature. So we're up to that point now. Would you like to remark on the opening 11 minutes?
Touché. Anything to add?
I thought the first Doctor's reaction when he did the TARDIS was brilliant.
Yes.
And then, of course, you had, you cut it across. I mean, as it happens often now, where someone's going to say it's big on the inside, they get cut across. What was the Brigadier's first words when he went into the TARDIS? I was thinking about that. Obviously,
didn't you just say good grief or something like that?
It was something like that, followed by, so this is what you've been doing with all those units.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I just wonder, was there a relevance into what the captain said as to what the Brigadier first said as well?
Possibly, I don't know.
All I remember is later on in the episode, the captain says, oh gosh, these police boxes are wonderful, aren't they?
Yes, he does indeed. Anyway, back to the story. All right, so...
Sorry to interrupt. It's
Paul.
Finally made it.
Paul's on.
Hey.
I don't know how many more people I can fit into this room.
internet issues.
Welcome aboard the ship.
You timed that rather well, because I was just about to re-embark from the 11th minute in from the story, and I was just giving Matthew, Paul, by the way.
Hello.
Matthew, Reese, Paul Reese. I don't think you've met Reese either.
Hello.
Hiya.
He's been on the show on and off since he was about 12.
yes.
But yeah, we're just discussing the opening scenes up to about the 11th minute, and what we got for Christmas. Did you get anything nice for Christmas, Paul?
I got a food dehydrator.
A rehydrator?
Dehydrator.
Okay. Oh. What's the purpose of that, then, please, Paul?
Well, you can make dried fruit, or you can make jerky, or you can
you know, all that sort of stuff. Dry food, basically.
And of course, we've had one
for about 20 years. We use it quite a bit.
It's always one-upmanship with you, Kirby, isn't it? But yes, Paul, there's also another little present that's coming along with you later on next year.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're having another child in June next year.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
How many children is that you've got then? Well, we'll have, rather.
That'll be our second.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Nice.
So there's time for you yet, Andy. Anyway, back to the story. Right.
I'll be 53 next year. Blimey.
So doesn't matter, does it? Right. Right. So basically, Paul, we've gone through the opening bits where we've had the beautiful way they combine the old 1960s footage with the new stuff and did a bit of a face merge for Hartnell to Bradley. To bring Bradley into it, and then we the fake Ben and Polly, and so we've gone for all these opening bits where all the main characters are introduced, including the captain, and so we're now, they've just left the snow to run away from the glass figure, and are now admiring the 12th Doctor's TARDIS and his supply of brandy that's dropped down a little bit. So how did you think the first opening 12 minutes were then, as far as the story goes?
Oh, I thought it was good. I think they did it very well. It was very beautiful. Hmm. Didn't make a lot of sense, but it was absolutely beautiful. Yeah. My son absolutely loved it. He loved the idea that there were two doctors at the one time. He thought that was fantastic. He kind of thought everyone was the doctor, though. So
right, okay. Oh, I think he's a better reply.
He has the excuse of being 3 years old.
Yeah. Isabella definitely did that when she was three. We tried that on the show with all the Doctor Who figures. We put them in a bag and pulled them out, and she'd tell us who it was, and she didn't manage to say each one of them was the doctor. So that was quite an interesting thing. Go back into the early days of the 20 Megabyte podcast, episode 5, I think that was. Oh, you remember that, do you, Kirby? That's good, then.
Yes.
Anyway, so right, back to the story. So the doctors are sort of trying to work out what's going on with this time. Obviously, the 12th Doctor, being all dramatic, thinks it's something majorly wrong with time. The first Doctor seems to be a bit more laid back with the situation. Mm-hmm. And then as they're getting settled, the TARDIS gets picked up by a sort of strange crane thing and hoisted into this...
the
spaceship
of the 50th.
Yeah.
I think they just they reused some of the 50th.
there was a bit of bit of reusing
in
certain aspects.
TARDIS, I'll bet, you know, sitting in a back sound stage, and they're saying, "What can we do with this?"
Yes, indeed.
Build it. What can we do with it?
Yeah.
Well, when they were filming, they were pulling all the First Doctor props and stuff from an Adventure in Time back out of the Doctor Who experience in Cardiff. So.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. But I'm glad they did that.
I would be surprised.
Glad they did that. I think they did make... I don't know if a lot of the roundels in the First Doctor's TARDIS were actually computer-generated, because having seen it, it's not that big as far as the backdrop goes. But whatever they did with it, it looked fantastic when we saw it. But we haven't got to that bit yet.
Here's the issue I had with it.
Yeah, go on.
I have always thought that Time Lord technology is the most advanced in the universe.
Yeah.
And I really hate when they... You know, all of a sudden they have something that is more advanced than the Time Lords. It just doesn't, in my brain, it doesn't sit
okay.
Well, you know, that kind of bothers me.
I also know how egotistical Time Lords are, though.
That bothered me, too.
They could just be saying that.
Yeah, yes. Possibly, but I think, I know, it has never really sat well, but, you know, you kind of have to switch off. But if you've got to do a critical analysis, that bothered me somewhat, because... Yeah,
we have a statement that covers all that sort of stuff, Paul. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
Don't want the Doctor to be Superman and have all the best technology and win very easily.
No, we do. We absolutely do want him to have the best technology and the best of everything. That is absolute. That, I think for me, that's really important. He may not know everything, but he has the tools at his disposal to find out everything. And I just think the TARDIS, and even the Doctor says, you know, the TARDIS is the most magnificent machine in the universe, and it should be the most magnificent machine in the universe. And I don't think humans should be able to be better than Time Lords. That's what I just think. I mean, that's just my personal opinion.
That's fair enough.
And I felt the same way about all the archaic phrases that the First Doctor was using, that of course the 12th kept jumping on him. Well, you can't say that. I mean, Time Lords, every time they swan into a new situation, they know all about that civilization and how to talk to it and how to behave within it and all that.
No, not necessarily, because I actually think that was great what they did there. I thought that was really good, because, you know, it was harking back to a different time.
Yeah.
And the Doctor didn't know it about everything in the universe. He built that knowledge up over time. And yes, maybe the Time Lords do. Maybe the Matrix has all that information. Maybe the Time Lords have that in their archives. However, the Doctor doesn't. And the Doctor's shown that, right? And the First Doctor
didn't. But the Doctor, throughout the series, has always referred to, oh, yes, I knew Leonardo da Vinci. And, oh, yes, I gave advice to, you know.
Yeah, they're through his adventures. But the First Doctor, when he's out and about, he doesn't know any. He doesn't know anything about the Daleks. He doesn't know anything about the Cybermen. And they say in this episode that his version of the TARDIS doesn't have anything in the databanks. It's empty, basically. He's only started on his adventures. He's stolen a TARDIS that obviously has nothing in it. We know that the Doctor was a terrible student, so probably didn't listen at school.
Yeah.
You know, and
hangover.
So I actually think, and I've read some interesting comments from some nerds out there who were saying, oh, look, you know, now we've turned the Doctor into a woman-hating, you know, we must hate all men now that we have a woman Doctor, et cetera, et cetera. No, it was harking back to a different time. It was funny. It was a lot of fun. And it was, you know, he is your sexist old granddad, isn't he?
They're being accurate.
Adventure in Time and Space, I mean, how racist the people destroyed us there. Yeah. I mean, the barman when... and I've gone completely blank. The foot, come on, help me, the lady's name.
Well, Verity Lambert.
Thank you, Verity Lambert. She had to insist on them being served. Mm. Paul's quite right.
Yeah.
That was a very different era.
Indeed.
When sexism and racism was the accepted thing. Mm. It's like if you think about, there's one of the McCoy stories there's a sign at the door. No blacks and Irish.
Remembrance of the Daleks you were referring to.
Yeah, that's it. It was a different time.
Yes, it was.
Well, I can accept the fact that the filming happened in a different time, but the Doctor I think of as timeless.
Absolutely. Except that when you go back and look at some of those First Doctor stories, there are sort of moments. I mean, all works of art, in inverted commas and lowercase a, are products of time in which they're created in. And I think that it's a part of the First Doctor's characterization to an extent. There is this moment where the Doctor turns to Susan at one point and threatens to spank her on the bottom, which they do reference later on in this. So it's a part of the characterization of the First Doctor, I think. Not to the extent that they overplay it here, but it is a part of the characterization of that. I mean,
because they overplayed it, that it bothered me as much.
Yeah.
A little bit may not have been, you know, might have been funny, but I found that I felt they overplayed it.
Well, before we move on, it's probably what I've spoken about before. It's Moffat has rather got a bit overindulgent in the references to the history of Doctor Who within this current era. The more we've got into it, the more he references old Doctor Who, rather like John Nathan Turner did toward the end of his time. But it's just something he does, and hopefully will stop now we have a new input of Doctor Who. And I think the slate's been wiped clean a little bit. Obviously, they can get out the situation at the end, which we'll talk about later.
I hope it doesn't stop completely, but I do hope it does.
Oh, yeah, the occasional reference is acceptable. They've all done that. Yes. RT did the occasional. But it's constant with Moffat. It's always
that being
some sort
said,
of old
I
reference.
Still adore things like at the beginning of the episode where it went from the black and white footage to
color. That was beautiful.
I just love how much attention to detail they put
in. Absolutely,
it's just wonderfully done.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Anyway, back to the story. So, right. They end up on the...
Minute 13.
Yeah, we're in the 15th minute. They're on the spaceship. They've been hoisted up into the spaceship. And then Bill walks around the corner, the doctor's immediately suspicious, because obviously he was unconscious when the actual Bill came back into the TARDIS with Heather, which seems to be rather glossed over, even though they didn't mention it, but this is referencing the fact that Bill is actually dead and this is her memories encapsulated within this avatar, but it is actually Bill. But the doctor won't have it, he doesn't believe it, despite the initial hug.
At that point, when they had the first doctor there,
yeah,
and they said, in exchange for this guy, you'll get to see her again. And for a moment, in silhouette, I thought, oh my God, it's Susan.
Yeah, I didn't think that, but that's a good point.
I was really excited. I thought, my God, they brought Susan back, but they didn't, obviously. Let me just clarify what I'm going to say before I go into this. I thought this story was probably the best Christmas special that we've seen in a long time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
However, just like the last Regeneration, nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened in this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you were sitting around for an hour or however long it was, waiting for the doctor to regenerate. Mm-hmm. There was no,
yeah, that's probably about right.
There was no...
no adventure.
There was no adventure. Yeah. There was no tension. Nothing happened.
Right.
But what I want to say is that I do think it was better than the last one and the one previously, and it was better than the previous Regeneration. However, in saying that, there was a lot that I didn't like, and I love that they brought Bill back, because I thought Bill was a fantastic companion for this doctor. I think Capaldi's doctor really shot when it was Bill and Nardole. Was that his name?
Nardole.
I thought those three were great as a team. Fantastic team. This last series, brilliant compared to what we had with Clara.
Hmm.
But Moffat did what he has done the whole time. He won't let anyone die. He won't let anyone go. And it kind of ruins the story, because you know that she's not going to, she's not going to die, in inverted commas. Mm. Yes, it's her memories, but, you know, basically they've brought her back to life. They bring these characters back to life, and it kind
of... She was already brought back to life by Heather.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, she's already been brought back to life by Heather.
That's the point. He can't let anyone die.
No, exactly, he can't. That's right.
When you don't let anyone die... It destroys...
It removes the jeopardy of a storyline, doesn't it?
The jeopardy and the suspense, because there's nothing to worry about. And he's...
I would argue in this case it's Schrodinger's Bill, because it's just memory. She's not alive or dead, in a way.
Well, Reese, is that because this is from 5 billion and 4 and beyond, that Bill is dead. This is every person in the universe has had their memories, their personality stored within this facility.
Yeah. I would argue that she is dead because she's just a glass creature with a projection of her memories. Yeah. So.
Yes.
But let her go. Let her. Don't bring her back if she's dead. If she's dead, she's dead.
Yeah.
The thing is, a contract's a contract. She signed up to do a Christmas special.
But
that's not good storytelling.
No, I agree.
Do it once, and you have a spectacular episode in the Doctor dances, and you have Everybody Lives.
Spectacular
episode, but you do it every single time, and
it becomes boring, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a problem New has had from day one, because even if you go back to the RPD era, we're going to kill Rose. No, we're not going to kill Rose. She's stuck in a universe, an alternate universe, and she'll never be able to cross back over. Cue end of series 4, where literally everybody comes back. And, of course, RTD kept bringing back Martha, both in series 4 and in Twood. And, of course, do we need to mention End of Time and spending, we want to talk about self-indulgence, 20 minutes spent bringing back every character you came from the RTD era. So I think it's a problem across New Who. I don't think it's specific to Moffat. I think it's a problem across all of Who and both showrunners to date.
It's different to just bring people back that have like left the scene, but we're talking about people who died. And so it takes all the drama and the
But the trouble is, Mary, with the time travel series, there's always a chance you can go and visit someone who's already dead before they died. So there's always going to be a bit of a knot tied in that situation. But that has, like Paul says, it is something that happens all the time. And the only reason they do it is because they find out that character's been quite popular with the fans. We'll bring him back to get some viewers. That's the only reason why they do it.
I'd be fine with it if there was a season or series or two between the death and the return. But it's every year you get the character returning as soon as possible.
Yeah. Indeed it does. Anyway, back to the story, because we've nearly got to 20 minutes. the next bit is a lovely little scene that the fans will love, but also find a bit embarrassing when we see all the images of the previous incarnations of the Doctors bouncing around this great big place. Again,
cut out all the jokes.
Do you know? Yeah, cut out all the jokes. That was funny. But do you remember one of the Christmas specials, the one where with the Jackson, the teacher bloke, whatever his name was? They were so excited when that little device beamed these images of the previous Doctors, which then proved to fans that the previous Doctors had existed in this sort of canon of Doctor Who, and now it's happening all the blooming time again. But it was for us. I enjoyed seeing these little images of the Doctor. Yes,
Master. The images were the Third Doctor from Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Oh, good
Lord. Doctor Ark of Infinity. Seventh Doctor from the
Heavy.
Let him indulge it. Have you done it yet?
Gosh, we've got a real Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kirby.
That's Kirby being Kirby.
Ninth Doctor, Party of the Ways, and Tenth Doctor, Waters of Mars.
It's lovely. Thank you, Kirby. Anyway, from that point on, they decide, the Twelfth Doctor decides they're going to escape by jumping on and grabbing the cranes that support the TARDIS.
That's the thing I love about this show. It's got a great budget, but when they do stunts, they're just reaching out and grabbing rope.
you know what bothered me about that? And I turned to my wife, and I said to Amy, their hands are going to be ripped to shreds.
Yes, exactly. They were sliding down there. I said, that's going to work.
The chain would be getting very cold.
Yeah, I did say to Deb, that's going to work. But what got me, and I said immediately, the first Doctor's TARDIS is down there. It's not a major problem. And then, of course, I did love when they stepped inside and we saw the set for the first Doctor's TARDIS. Mm. Apart from the rather strange monitor, I don't remember it looking like that, it was absolutely perfect. I also loved the bit when, obviously, they ended up on the planet and you could see out through the doors. It was very reminiscent of that era of Doctor Who as well.
Where was his companions? Where were they?
They were still on the cyber ship, weren't they?
They're between. They're like walking between the cyber ship and the TARDIS.
Yeah, they're on their way to the TARDIS from the Spy cyber ship.
Yeah, yeah. So surely they would have been there by now.
No.
It's a time travel.
No, because the time has been frozen by these glass creatures.
Yeah, but you know, the Doctor gets there and he flies off and he does all sorts of stuff and then he goes and regenerates. But aren't they around him when he regenerates? Or am I?
Yeah.
They were there. Yeah.
Into the TARDIS right after he's already collapsed on the floor and he begins regenerating. So, there is a bit of a gap.
So why aren't they there when he regenerates?
Well, they are, but they're just off. They're out of camera angle.
They were outside of the TARDIS. They walk in.
Yeah, no, but the bit they showed of the regeneration, they were actually in the room, but they weren't within camera shot because the camera zoomed in on the Doctor on the floor. Yes. But a good point. Right, so the Doctor, meanwhile, decides that he's going to go and face or get this
Master?
This database that he's after. Yes?
Did you see my post a little earlier today? The planet that they're on is another Moffat's reference to Moffat.
Mm.
They're at the Weapon Forges of Villengard.
Yes.
And
yes.
that was referred to in The Doctor Dances. That's where Captain Jack's sonic blaster came from.
Thank you, Kirby.
It was replaced by a banana factory.
So anyway, anyway, so the doctor goes to he wants to get this this database that has all the information he needed. Tells everybody to stay in the TARDIS. We have a scene in which the captain gets attacked by what looks like an octopus stuck to his face, and I immediately said to somebody who said in the house, "What was that?" I said, "It's all right, it's only a Dalek. Don't worry about it." And
yeah, I knew it was a Dalek immediately.
But I did think they were on Skaro at this point because of the way the place looked. So the doctor, there's a point in which Bill offers the captain a brandy, and then you see this sort of glass arm go and grab the brandy bottle, and you think, uh-oh. And then
surely everyone knew that she was a glass creature. Well,
yeah, but they were implying that obviously that there was something sinister with these glass creatures. Then she goes off to have a bit of a convo with the 12th Doctor, and then has another conversation with the First Doctor. While the 12th Doctor, I'm getting very confused here, goes upstairs and meets old Rusty. So I'm quite pleased they brought Rusty back.
Yeah,
well, so glad to finally deal with that.
They didn't have to. He hasn't dealt with anything.
Bringing characters back from the dead. Didn't Rusty go on to that Dalek ship that then exploded?
No.
The first edit that they did, the leaked one that came out. But they cut it from the episode before it went out. I guess now we know why.
I've been living with the thought that Rusty died on that ship.
No, he didn't. No, and it was nice to reference it. But there's loads of other things that Moffat has put in that they never really did explain
that
or solve.
That felt like the least convoluted reference of all. Yes, really enjoyed that, and it surprised me. It was good.
Yes, totally unexpected, and I quite liked the way he sort of talked Rusty into allowing him into the room and stuff like that.
Yeah, but there was no payoff.
No,
that's true.
No,
that's when the story lost all its tension and momentum in a way.
Yeah,
I think when Bill turned up. Was when it lost all its tension and momentum. But again,
I'm going to be honest. I've got a very horrible confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I've had such a very busy and mess of a year that I've only got 3 episodes into the last season or series. And I haven't seen much Bill, and it was really great to see her. I really like Pearl Mackey. She's just a fun actress, and her character is... The thing I like about her character compared to a lot of other companions towards the end of their run is that she's still having fun. I think... Writers stay too long on Doctor Who, or executive producers, and I think companions have started staying too long. So it's good that she's gone now, but she's got this energy to her that I really want to see the rest of the season or series. And yes, I'm saying both because I'm being very generous for Christmas.
Thank you very much.
She's a fantastic companion. She works, as I said earlier, the three of them as a team work wonderfully, and I think they're one of the best teams that we've seen since Rose, to be honest.
Yeah, one thing they didn't resolve was the thing we thought they were going to resolve was in the Day of the Doctor, when all 13 Doctors TARDISes were going around Gallifrey, and we saw the eyebrows and everything like that. It was implied
that reference to that, though. Towards the end of this, I know we're jumping around and we're probably only 24 minutes into.
No, we're
the story.
40 minutes in so far. Might as well done a commentary on it.
Yeah, but there was a great reference towards the end where the 12th Doctor says to the First that he'll reach this point in his life, but he'll go the long way around, which was the last line Matt Smith says in the 50th.
Oh, well done. Well done, yes.
Can we just talk one last thing?
Yes, go on.
50th, but, and I've been waiting for a payoff from the 50th.
Yes.
You know, that he says, oh, well, it looks like what I'm paraphrasing here. But he says, you know, it looks like my adventure is now to go find the Time Lords. And he never goes off on his adventure to find the Time Lords, does he?
No.
Right. I wonder.
So he
does find them, though, but he doesn't actually go off on an adventure to find them.
Not really. How do they find him? Mm. And, you know, it was implied that there was going to be this great big adventure. And this is endemic through all of Moffat's stories. There's no payoff. Absolutely no payoff. No. At least
until you get to one episode called Time of the Doctor, which was too much of a mess. Yes, and we get tried to pay everything off.
You get half decent regeneration.
That wasn't the payoff that they were promising. At least RT gave you payoffs. It didn't. Yes, his stories had plot holes in them. Drive a lorry, but you got your payoff. You never get any payoff with.
Not very often. Certainly, it's difficult to remember.
I think there's one.
The only payoff is the fact that we get a series of Doctor Who to watch. I suppose that's about it.
I don't know what Chibnall's going to be like because, if you're going to judge Chibnall on his past Doctor Who, then there's going to be.
It's not the greatest. Same with the Torchwood.
You're open-minded.
Yeah, exactly. Be open-minded. Yes. Right. So anyway, so the Doctor gets his database and. Realizes that it's now time for the captain to go back and die, but Bill has a word with
Merry
him.
Merry Christmas,
and,
everyone.
Thank you. Yeah. Bill has a word with him, and he adjusts the timeline by a couple of hours so as we can have a beautiful scene of the Christmas armistice, which was.
Hang on a second.
Yes.
Hold on.
Yes.
Are you telling me that he didn't die? Are you saying that Moffat didn't kill someone?
Yeah, I am.
Let's be honest, they were all dead in the next scene. They just didn't show it.
But yeah, possibly, yeah. But no, he had to stay alive to sort of maybe father the rest of the Lethbridge-Stewart clan. Oh, yes, there was a reference, a beautiful reference to Lethbridge-Stewart again.
His sons have already been born, so
he could have
died.
According to the people running the official Lethbridge Stewart book range, he's actually the Brigadier's great uncle, apparently.
Okay. Yeah. But it was still quite nice. I quite like. I think I preferred this reference to the Brigadier than the Cyber Brig they had previously, and the way it was announced when Nick Courtney had actually died. So this was actually the nicest of the references to Lethbridge Stewart they've had.
Yeah, so very well done.
The music from the first one, the first episode he was referencing, yes.
Yeah, and also...
The music in this episode has stuff all the way back from 2005.
It does, because it's Murray Gold's last episode.
Murray Gold's last episode, yes. There's been a lot of payoffs and references to him.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, did everyone notice Bad Wolf?
Yeah,
it did. It was a bit of a shock, really.
Yeah. But I was saying, the Lethbridge Stewart thing was quite nice because we were all guessing who the captain might be. He might be a sort of another Time Lord or something a bit more sinister. And it was quite a lovely, unexpected payoff to find out that he was, in fact, just another Lethbridge Stewart. I thought that was lovely.
For some reason in my brain, I thought, oh, is he the guy that invents police boxes?
So then we have the goodbye scene between the Doctors and then the redone version of the first Doctor of Regeneration, and which was quite nice. We'll also see a little glimpse of Troughton as well in that. And then we have, which is essentially a redone version of... I mean, I don't know if you guys remember... quite a while back now, we were discussing the rumour that Jenna Coleman was going to return to Doctor Who for a cameo. And I said, some people were saying, nah, she won't. I said, she will. She'll be in the regeneration scene because Karen Gillan came back for it. And they tend to like to bring them back now, or Moffat does, for regeneration scenes. In fact, when Tennant regenerated into Smith, there was about half an hour of bringing previous characters back. I've seen them
all. Right. Yes, man, right. Go ahead. You can brand about it.
It was fairly obvious that Clara was going to come back for that scene. I quite like that bit, actually. Oh, yeah. It was quite emotional, the way they did that, especially when...
I felt they didn't need it.
They didn't need it, but I quite liked it.
The music didn't go over the top like it did in Time of the Doctor when Amelia appeared again. It was just, hello, I'm back, and then goodbye.
I liked it because he now remembers her.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, Kirby. I'd like him to remember as his companions. He was with Clara for 23 years, like her or don't like her. He has to remember her.
Yeah. Or love her. I mean, yeah.
But yeah, so...
I like the idea that he didn't remember her. Oh. And I think it would have been much better if you had three or four or five series down the line. Then you bring back those memories and you do something with it. Don't just bring it back. Mm. You know, just because it's the last episode.
But that's what Moffat does.
Again, I found that...
That's what Doctor Who does nowadays.
Oh, yes. But I did like Nardole coming back. I didn't expect him to reappear.
Yes, with his entire glass body, not just glass nipples.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
They get the hair wrong.
Yeah. You don't have any hair. I have invisible hair. Yeah.
So that was basically a very long, drawn-out thing. And then when he steps back into the TARDIS... he's finally decided he's going to have another go at it. But very, very, bearing in mind he's been on the verge of regeneration for now nearly two episodes.
yeah.
He would have thought he could just stand there and
over and over, just lay down and regenerate, yeah. Just get
to it. Well, see, I mean, you compare these to previous regeneration, this is far away the longest. I mean, Matt Smith dragged his out.
No, it's so not. Tenants was right the longest.
I disagree. Really, the regeneration is when they start to completely glow and let go. He's just holding it off. That's yeah. the longest yeah, regeneration. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. Oh, you're right, Rhys, yes.
The third to the fourth Doctor, which is like, it's a blink of an eye, it's over, isn't it? And also Capaldi, when Smith turned Capaldi, the actual final change was like, bang!
It was. But that was because there was a reset on that one, whereas the first of a new cycle of regeneration. So I let her off that one. But what I will say, once he'd actually started regenerating, it was quite beautifully done. The ring dropping on the floor.
The Doctor regenerates, that his TARDIS falls apart. I mean, that is like...
Yeah, they got it's a new producer, new TARDIS. But yeah, so,
he blew his apart, didn't he?
But I felt as if, you know, the conversation he was having with the TARDIS before he regenerated, he was literally mm-hmm. having a row with his wife, wasn't he? But then he turns into a woman, and the TARDIS spits him out, or her out. So I'm not having this in my TARDIS, in myself. And I think it was part of the TARDIS doing a rebuild, and the part of the TARDIS spitting the Doctor out. Now, the Doctor's going to hit...
I've got a bit of a theory about that, actually.
No, can I say my theory first?
The TARDIS is part of the influence as to why... The body is now a female body.
Quite possibly.
As opposed to a male
Allow
body.
Me to say my theory first. Anyway, she falls out of the TARDIS. She's regenerating still. She hits the ground. She's going to be fine because obviously they said that if you're in that regeneration cycle with it, you've got a period of time which you'll be all right. The TARDIS, meanwhile, is just going off to fix itself, and then it will land next to them somewhere during the first episode of the next series. You may do your theory now.
Okay, well, my theory is just that the Doctor's kind of lost hope in life, and he's tired, and he's sick of seeing people die. And
don't mean she.
Well, I mean the 12th Doctor, or 14th, or whatever argument you want to use. I'm going to say 12th, because that's what they say on the bloody show. The 12th Doctor is all weary, tired of travelling, tired of losing people, and doesn't really want to let go of this body and go through it again. But I think the TARDIS influences the regeneration and gives the Doctor a new lease of life by giving this being a new form that it has never had before, which happens to be a woman, and that's why she says, oh, brilliant, because now I've got an entire new set of experiences.
Yeah, and nobody will know who she is.
Yeah.
Hence Doctor Who. Anybody else with any other theories?
Well, if you look on the screen, just as everything starts going off, as in the TARDIS scanner screen or monitor or whatever you want to call it, it does flash up a message saying, systems critical, right before all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
Which would seem to suggest that something from the regeneration, and indeed the way they send her sort of column on the console, suddenly sort of seems to explode, looks a lot like regeneration energy. So it suggests that that regeneration energy has been channeled into the TARDIS itself, which is causing whatever's wrong with it, and probably throws the Doctor out to trying to save the Doctor so it can go off, as you say, and rebuild itself.
My theory is that it's in the contract of the scene-building crews that every couple of years they get to build a new TARDIS.
That's not part of the plot, though, Mary.
In the middle of Capaldi's thing, you know, then we've only seen that TARDIS for maybe two... Capaldi. I'm sorry. We've only seen it for maybe 2 years, you know, but the TARDIS keeps falling apart so they can build new ones.
Money, Lego sets.
Money.
Chibnall said he wanted a complete, you know... Clean slate. It's nothing to do with the builders or anything. It's the producer. But going back to an in universe explanation, I think my theory is that the more the Doctor regenerates, the more violent they become.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You see this progression, and I think, you know, he'd been holding on to this energy for so long, and it did just fire out and blow the whole thing. You saw the same thing happen with Tennant going into Matt Smith, and the Doctor got thrown out of the TARDIS then as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing when the TARDIS starts to rebuild, it's just not a hospitable place for the Doctor to be at that point in time. I don't think the TARDIS was throwing the Doctor out for any other reason than to save her life.
Okay.
And do what it needed to do. On a completely different subject, though, I just want to talk about the regeneration into the female doctor. And, you know, my son, who's 3 years old, he's kind of wrapped his head around the idea of regeneration. There's different doctors and things. He hasn't seen many Doctor Who episodes. This is the first Christmas special. This is the first regeneration he's seen, but he understands that there's different doctors and he understands that they're the same people. And after the regeneration, he saw that the doctor turned into a woman. He had a bit of a hard time with that. And he was saying, you know, he couldn't quite wrap his head around that a man turned into a woman. No problem for a man turning into a man, but a man turning into a woman was a little bit hard for him. So we sat him down and we spoke about it and we said, you know that men and men can get married and women can get married, yes. And then he piped up and he said, but I don't want to get married. I said, that's okay. You don't need to get married. But he said, we said, you understand all that. And I said, and you can be whatever you want to be. He said, yes. Oh, yes. He said, yes, a woman can be the doctor. Yes. Okay. I understand that. And then he was on to more concerned. Then he was more concerned about the TARDIS blowing up. He was very yeah. upset about that. And it suddenly occurred to me that if my 3-year-old can wrap his head around the fact that the doctor's mm-hmm. turning to a woman and he's okay with that, then all the adult babies out there
mm-hmm.
should be able to cope with it.
I must admit though, Paul, when I watched it, it actually worked for me. It seeing it happen and seeing that face change, it was a regeneration. Oh, yeah. I felt much better in my heart seeing her in the part and seeing that happen, rather than how I was going to imagine it. Because obviously Moffat's made a cock up of a few regenerations, but seeing it, I'm happy now that she's a doctor and things are going to continue. Yeah.
I never had any problem with the idea of it. But here's the thing, you know, I was thinking, my son had a problem with a man turning into a woman, but he had an excuse. He was 3 years old.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All these adult babies out there, men and women, mm. those babies yep. out there who can't cope with it. If my son, who is 3 years old, who did have a problem with it.
Well, but being 3 years old, he doesn't have a lifetime of things that make him comfortable, you know, that he's gotten used to and come to rely on. You see it in the young generation with electronics. I mean, they continually accept large swaths of new kinds of stuff that older people have a difficult time accepting because they're out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, well, you know, it's time for people to get out of their comfort zone. If their comfort zone is so narrow that they can't cope with a fictional character turning into a woman, then, you know, they're the ones that have the problem. And I get quite wound up with them trying to turn this around to being the problem is the producers, the problem is the feminists, the problem is, you know, political correctness gone mad. No. They're the ones with the problem. The people who are making these decisions and who are moving the story forward and bringing it into the 21st century and all that sort of stuff, they're not the people with the problem. And that's what I'm saying. My son had an excuse. He was 3 years old and he got over it in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
People who are much older.
Quite right, so.
Should be able to get over it in a lot less time.
Well done. Well said.
I mean, it's not like this is an idea that just came out of nowhere either. I mean, the idea of a female doctor seems to start with Tom Baker. I mean, it's been there in fan films and Big Finish audios and everything else since then. So it's not like somebody just woke up one day and went, hey, I've got a really great idea of how we can, you know, and make Moffat, a certain group of people
Moffat
really
was actually wrote a female doctor really in Giant Alumni, and that was a spoof female doctor. It has happened in the past.
And ignoring everyone's response to it and the possible political correctness gone mad and all of that, the show's about change, and for 50 plus years this is a change that it hasn't done, so plot wise just give it a go.
Absolutely. I'm excited now. Right. And a brand new style of Doctor Who coming. I just hope that Chibnall does the opposite of what Moffat did, because obviously Moffat came in, everybody thought it was going to be all singing dancing because he's a great writer, and it went a bit and I think people's expectations of Chibnall are not as high as they were of Moffat.
I warned everyone about Moffat. I said he's not a great writer.
What show was that you warned everybody about Moffat on, Paul? I'm being facetious, yes. You did indeed on the good old Daddy Show.
He steals stories. He can't let people die. He
doesn't have a really unique idea in his brain.
And I can confirm that you said this, because the first time I heard of you was on Staggering Stories when you reviewed the Doctor Dances, and you were ranting about that then.
Paul is very consistent, which is why we have a podcast.
I said it would not be the I hoped it would be the Shangri-La that we hoped, but I knew it wouldn't be. And you know, for all of RTD's faults, and I've said it a million times, he has plot holes that you can drive a lorry through.
Or a flying bus through.
Or a flying
badly CGI'd one.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you got emotion. That's the thing. I think that's the thing. Moffat doesn't seem to be able, couldn't do emotion like RTD could.
No,
RTD,
true.
I have to say, RTD has struggled with a lot of women's characters. And, you know, you saw that with what's her name, Catherine Tate, and the mother in Sarah Jane Adventures, and a lot of other women. They all were kind of these batty women. But, you know, he did emotion very well. He did pay off with the stories. He knew that to keep a story going, you had to have some heartbreak in there, because if you didn't have heartbreak, you don't have a story. You don't have anything to go with. Moffat, on the other hand, you know, there were points in this story where I felt my heartstrings tense a little bit, but in the next scene, it was gone because you just didn't get the payoff. And you see that all the way through his tenure. There were some good stories. I'll give you that. And particularly, they picked up their game in this last series.
Yep.
Absolutely picked their game up. Because, you know, Capaldi's first series was blooming awful.
Mm.
Yes.
No.
It was terrible. You know.
His whole time with Clara was pretty awful.
Yeah, Mary didn't like Clara.
No. And, you know, it got to the point where I hadn't watched Doctor Who in 2 years. I'd given up on it. We only watched the last two series
yesterday.
About 2 or 3 months ago. I had completely given up on it, simply because it was just got so bad. Matt Smith's series in the end was just dire.
Oh yeah.
I kept saying what Doctor Who needs is to go away. Just needs to go away for a while and then be brought back. What I also said was it needs to be brought back by not non-Doctor Who fans.
Mm.
And when they announced that Chibnall was taking over, I thought, oh, there's an opportunity to have someone who's not a Doctor Who fan take over and breathe new life in. That's my biggest worry. We've got another Doctor Who fan running the series.
I agree. Anyway, I'm going to have to move on because we're going to do some feedback. On the live Facebook feed at the moment, we have, I don't know what order this is supposed to be in, but Ian Kirk says, swag, Bluetooth headphones, pyjamas, robot arm, shower kit and socks, it's just saying what he got for Christmas, Bluetooth speaker, another shower kit, Christmas jumper and gloves, note the bags under the eyes from 12-hour Christmas working days. Also, pyjama buttons under stress from Christmas lunch. I've got that problem. Alan T. Butcher, I got Doctor Who socks. That is all. Oh, poor Alan. And then he says, well, I did get other stuff, but not Doctor Who related. And then he said, congratulations to Paul and Amy, which I think we echoed at the time. Joshua Dybul says, Doc 1 was never that bad. They definitely overplayed it and bent his character a bit much. He was doing a lot of the Shatnerisms, I noticed, where he was talking. It's very Shatner. I think
I noticed
swapped
that.
A little bit. Sort of playing a bit of Hartnell with Shatner stuck inside him. But yes, thank you, Kirby, for noticing that. Don't
and his
get a point.
Hands were permanently image. Stuck to his lapels, and I wish he would have put them down a few times.
Yeah. What else we got? We got Alan T. Butcher then said it's 5 billion and 12. Joshua Dybul, it sounded like any companion could have been brought back in those final scenes. And then Alan T. Butcher, pre-1989, Doctor Who killed one companion on average every 13 series. He says seasons, but he got that bit wrong, obviously. And
hang on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on.
Yes. Well, that's what he says. It's not necessarily true, but Alan's pretty accurate.
I don't think they killed them.
Yeah, they only killed three companions on screen the entire time of Classic Who. So
that must be every 13, on average, every 13, where they killed Katarina, didn't they? And then they killed Adric.
Was she a companion, though?
Essentially.
She's counted as one.
Yeah, essentially. Katarina and who? Adric.
Thank God.
Who else was killed off?
Oh, Adric got a bad rap.
He did.
He just like Will Wheaton. He got a bad rap.
Oh, and the other one, Sarah Kingdom. She was essentially a companion. She got
killed.
They
killed two companions off in one story for crying out loud.
They did indeed. And then Alan T. Butcher says the new TARDIS will have cushions. Apparently, the new TARDIS will have cushions. But there is more feedback, if I can find my feedback page. Pardon, Andy?
Yeah, there, Master?
Yes?
Master, there's two posts for asking for feedback, because I put one up.
Yeah, well, we tend to ignore your ones, don't we, Kirby, because obviously mine count.
No, but, there's feedback on mine, too.
We've also got, someone here wants your feedback. Come here, little man. Come on, come here. Zach, come here. No, he's gone out again.
Oh, don't blame him.
Stormy, come here.
Keep talking, shall we? Right then, Kirby. So I posted my one, and Billy Kirkbright said, not seen it yet, but watched a few spoilers. I love spoilers, look great. To which you replied, I knew almost all of the spoilers several hours before I saw it. God, you lot are irritating.
What's
the
point in watching it?
I've got Zach on my lap, so let's see if he's finished. Hello, Zach. Hello. Say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Oh, bless him.
Merry Christmas, Stormy.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Zach.
He's got a little present, which is it's a toothbrush kit, and the base is Thomas, where Thomas runs around the track, and he loves it. He won't let it go.
So you did well with that present, then. Well done.
So he's off his back now. So say bye-bye. Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Stormy. Have a nice New Year.
Thanks a lot,
folks. Anyway, back to feedback.
What? The first thing that I saw in this story was about 5 minutes after it finished broadcasting in the UK, they posted the entire regeneration scene on YouTube. So I saw that first.
Oh.
You know what you do when that happens?
What? Turn it off, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, I wanted to watch. I love spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Kirby, I want to watch, too, at the end of the episode when the regeneration happens.
Yeah, so I agree. Yes. I don't like spoilers. Laurie Nick says, glass aliens, celestial beings harvesting your life memories before you expire because they are supposedly being nice. Wait, what? And then Kirby responded with, better than dark water, death in heaven. Cyberman Afterlife. It was a bit of a reminiscence of that in that story. Anyway, Laurie Nix.
I absolutely hated that story.
Yes, a lot of people
did.
I love
it. Especially Dark Water. Great.
Laurie Nix says.
Horrible.
Laurie Nix also says he also flip flopped pretty quick there with that, oh, no more, won't kill me. Nevertheless, loved all the feels of the doctors bantering with each other and basically just staring at Capaldi's hair in adoration. Paul Gobert says, let me get the negatives out of the way. I didn't like the end cliffhanger. It seemed a bit silly. However, great story with an entertaining twist. Teary eye for the captain's name. Excellent performances from Capaldi, Bradley and even Gatiss. A fun intro for the new Doctor. Best Christmas special since the return by a long way. Fabulous. Rob Lansdowne. Sorry.
Speaking of Gatiss, we walked past him in London the other day.
Oh. Me and Debbie had our picture taken a few years ago, but
no, he didn't.
bit of a Hitler tash, that, isn't it?
Yeah, the moustache.
It's not really a Brigadier tash.
It changed between scenes as well. Anyway, back to the feedback. Rob Lansdowne said,
"The Brigadier."
That's true. Rob Lansdowne said, "It's very hard to judge as I saw it at the in-laws, and it wasn't very hard to hear it properly. I get that problem." But I sat close to the telly.
Wasn't very hard to hear it properly.
Yeah, it was very hard to hear it properly. Sorry, Rich.
Yeah, I had to replay with subtitles to get some of it.
Yeah, I got that on the second view, but I strategically turned the television up while everybody was out the room and sat close to it on a chair. So
Kirby mentioned he got a sound bar for Christmas.
Yes.
I'm at my parents' place at the moment and they've got one, and even I struggle to hear it with the sound bar, so there's certainly something wrong with the mix. People have been saying that for years, but I watch Doctor Who with headphones normally, but I watched it with
normal speakers or the soundbar, and I couldn't understand half the dialogue.
Oh, yeah. I will probably watch.
The words.
Yeah. Mm. I will probably warn everyone before I move on to the next bit of feedback that there's a possibility Debbie Melrose might be coming on the show, but we'll hold that back.
Yay!
Anyway, so moving on. Rob,
my second time through, I found some subtitles and watched it with subtitles.
Yeah, it is good to watch with subtitles. Some of the pronunciations of place names are a bit weird. Anyway, moving on, especially for quiz purposes.
I couldn't understand what her first words were. I couldn't even recognize the word brilliant.
Yeah. So, moving on, Rob Lansdowne continues. I might have been very tired, or it may have been a bit dull, or some combination thereof. Kirby then says a reference all the way back to Moffat's first Who story, not counting Curse of Fatal Death. Betty Kirkbright, to keep on the positive, won't mention what I didn't like of the episode, which wasn't very much anyhow. For a Christmas special, it's the best I've seen for a while. I enjoy multi-Doctor stories, not a bad plot, and wow, the Christmas Day truce and end was brilliant. Speaking of brilliant, is Jodie going to retain her own Northern accent for the role, obviously Eccleston did?
So somehow that was headline news.
Yeah. Well, lots of planets have a north anyway, don't they, everybody?
Yes, they do.
Yes.
And then Ian Kurt said he's posted his transcript, which we will hear shortly.
Transcript.
Yeah, thank you. I've got mouth problems. Was there anybody on your rubbish post, Kirby?
Let me see. It's not a rubbish post. Lori Nix said that she would post if she had recovered enough to put two words together. So she also posted a picture of sadness from that Pixar movie I don't remember the name of, crying.
Inside Out.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Joshua Dyball says, I've just been rewatching 10th Planet in anticipation.
Yes.
Lori says, if I watch bits of the 10th Planet, I end up talking in a really annoying sing-song way the rest of the day. And before the Christmas special was broadcast, Rob Lansdowne posted, it was rather derivative, and the new chap looked a bit odd.
The only thing that made me want to watch was the last Matt Smith story. I wanted to watch that prior to watching this one, but I never got around to it. But I think I will delve into that one. It did, just to see how it compares as a regeneration story. Anyway,
I like that one to a degree, but even I would leave that in place of this one.
I'd just like to delve into... I've only watched that story once or twice. I'd like to delve into random stories from time to time. Anyway, we've got this bit of feedback. I need my priority jingles folder. Just talk amongst yourselves a bit. I haven't been prepared for this episode because...
gosh, Adam's so underprepared, isn't he, guys?
You know why? Because of that PC problem I've got at the moment. No. But anyway, this feedback from... Oh, dear. Oh, that's not very good.
Oh, hello, oh, dear. How are you?
Oh, there we go.
Hello, Twenty Megabat Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hey.
Today is the Feast of Stephen, an appropriate day to review the last story by Stephen Moffat.
Yay!
Today is also known as Boxing Day, a violent sport which reminds us that where his work is discussed by fans, the threat of fisticuffs is not far away. Is Ben Shoveler on the podcast today?
No.
Twice Upon a Time by Stephen Moffat. There are parallels with Father's Day, in which Rose's father realises the world is going very wrong because he cheated death. Here, the brigadier-to-be decides he should go through with his postponed death in order to sort things out. There's a guest role for a character who both is and is not Bill Potts. Stephen was always reluctant to kill characters, and here the Doctor moves Captain Lethbridge Stewart to forward a few hours, so that the Christmas truce will kill him. In recent years, the Companion has seemed to outshine the Doctor. There will be trouble for women's lib if that happens to the 13th Doctor. Adam?
Yes?
Would you tell them there's a transcript on the Facebook page which you can join? It's no good me telling them if they can't understand me.
Okay, there's a transcript on the Facebook page that you can join. That's the 20 Megabyte Doc 2 podcast Facebook page. There you go, I've told you now, even though he does that every single week. Yes.
Never heard of it.
Oh, okay. Josh,
and we appreciate the transcript.
Jeff Waddle. Hang on. Jeff Waddle normally writes about three words. He's written a novel. But here we go.
Oh, so it wasn't just, it was bollocks.
No, it might be in there somewhere. I haven't read it yet. Hope you all had a great Christmas. I'd been getting excited for DW over the last few weeks, so I sat down in front of the TV with a glass of wine, hoping to be at least entertained, which I hadn't, or wish I hadn't bothered. Sorry. I didn't hate this. I certainly didn't love it. There was a little plot, and what plot there was really a carbon copy of the Tessalector story. Goodness knows, and wrong. Goodness knows that was poor enough. There was a good idea. Yeah, there was a good idea in here, downloading people's memories a second before death, which was, for me, was reminiscent of that story you didn't like, Kirby, the one with the Cybermen,
right.
When obviously Clara's boyfriend died, then didn't die, and then we had a cyber brig and all that. Anyway, back to Jeff.
Was he a soldier?
He was. My goodness, that's exactly bad. What the Matrix does. We never really found out why they did this. I must have missed it, but I don't know exactly why Capaldi went to South Pole, and really, the TARDIS took him there. That's why he went there.
Yeah.
I wish they had not bothered with the plot line. David Bradley did what he could with the role, but I don't think he was particularly great. And the writing of Doctor Number One was so far off the mark, you'd have sworn blind that Moffat had never seen a Hartnell story before. He was so much more than a sexist idiot. He was fun and childish. The joke about needing a woman to clean the TARDIS was fine once, but by the third time it was annoying, and the Doctor Number One even saying Time Lords was too jarring for me. Yeah, he would never have said Time Lords, good point. Gatiss gave his usual performance, but I'm sorry, for me anyway, he can only play one kind of character, an upper class idiot. Jeez. And he wasn't particularly good at that here. Capaldi acted his socks off as usual. I doubt there's ever been a better actor in the role, but he's seldom not great. And what I will say is, he's one thing that's kept me watching. I absolutely love this Doctor, but I can't love his era, as it was a bloody mess, interspersed with some genuine flashes of brilliance, much like the Matt Smith era, really. When Clara
what
came,
he's getting at if she doesn't like Stephen Moffat.
No, a bit like that. When Clara came on the scene, that was the final nail in the coffin for me. Why does he remember her now? I like that bit. After having some brilliant speeches in his time, what a travesty that Capaldi's final one was so forgettable and weak. It was like it was written by a 13-year-old. Don't insult 13-year-olds. I had one once, and I think Reese was 13 when he was first on the show. Bill was good in it, though. How old were you when you started your podcast, Reese?
Oh, good grief.
Quite young.
I was quite young. I can't even remember now.
It was only a couple of years ago, wasn't it? Anyway, Bill was good in it, though. Rusty was not. A barely rememberable character in an episode that a few people liked, and he's got access to knowledge even greater than the Time Lords. What the hell? It was a bit meh, and unfortunately,
this dude has just stolen all my points.
he probably wrote it after listening to your points, and unfortunately, that sums up the Moffat era for me. I've loved both Smith and Capaldi, but I struggle to compile 10 stories in their eras that I genuinely love, and that's not a good ratio for almost 7 years. Something had to change drastically, and though it wouldn't have been my choice, a female doctor may well be the way to go, and thought Jodie W. seems a lovely person. I'm genuinely struggling to see anything doctorish in her performances.
Good God, she's on for about 30 seconds. So that is ridiculous.
He's talking about previous performances, not the
she
one
had
she's
two
done.
Words. And also, I have to say, I don't agree with him. I think that Gatiss' performance was fantastic, particularly the bit where he's sitting there and talking about death, how when he was sitting in that crater, he was ready for death.
Yeah.
And I genuinely felt for him. And
you could see courage in his eyes, couldn't you?
This is where Moffat's writing, and then this makes me eat my words about him saying not doing emotion very well, because he actually did do.
I was going to beat you down with that later on, actually.
Because
you see him sitting there and saying, you know, Gator saying, I genuinely thought this was a miracle. I thought I was going to live, and now I don't have the taste for death. And I felt, and for that moment, in that moment, I thought, yeah, okay, I can see exactly what he's saying. When you're in the crater, you do get it. You know, when he was in the crater, or when you're faced with death, something inside you must kick in to get you prepared for that.
Yeah.
And then when it's taken away and you have hope, and then knowing that the death, that your death is coming, again, you know, is a completely different beast to being confronted with it without being able to think. And I thought that was a little bit of brilliance. And then Moffat ruins it all by cutting, and you lose that emotion, and he did it again. But I think Gator's performance was very good.
Yes.
He goes on to say, "Ah, well, goodbye, and thanks Peter Capaldi. Goodbye, and thanks Stephen Moffat. But you should have went 3 years ago. His era is nowhere near as good as it promised to be, and I feel sorry for Capaldi and Smith. Roll on, Chibnall and Whittaker. Can't be any worse. Have a brawn new year." I think that's a Scottish term.
Does anyone know what is the thing with the ring, when the ring drops off Capaldi's finger? But of course, the first Doctor had a ring he couldn't get back on again. But I don't think any other Doctor has had a ring. So I think, again, that's a real throwback, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
No, it didn't.
I know Pertwee had a ring.
Yeah, Pertwee had a ring.
Mm. Oh. But anyway.
So if you've got a stuck ring, you just have to regenerate and you can get it off. Good to know.
Thank you, Reese. Right. Joshua Dybal says, "Loved it. A super episode. A great bookend to the end of an era. I enjoyed it from beginning to end. Well worth the wait and all the hype. I've watched it 3 times already, which says it all. The good points. Fun banter between the Doctors. Seeing Clara again. Bless her heart. Learning that the Brigadier came from Cromer." Oh, yeah, of course.
It doesn't come from Cromer. Cromer is just where he thought they were the third Doctor.
Yeah, but
the three Doctors.
Yeah.
Does he actually come from Cromer?
I think he's saying the family comes
apparently
from Cromer.
Yes.
Yeah. The family, the Lethbridge Stewart family, comes from Cromer. That's what the story implied. Remember, the Brigadier thought he was in Cromer in the Three Doctors.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Lovely having this connection with my hometown. Seeing the old TARDIS interior again, the original and best. The sprinkling of Doctor Who melodies from past times. I'm sure this really raised emotional levels for everyone. Spine tingling. Only niggles. I know it wasn't William Hartnell, but even though David Bradley put in a superb performance, I felt they'd changed his character a little bit. And he didn't act as if he was at death's door in the 10th planet. There was no way he could have slid down the chain onto the TARDIS and jumped to the ground. But he started to regenerate. As the Capaldi character said, they actually started regenerating, that they all felt a little bit better and had a bit of a, you know, had a bit of a power surge within their bodies.
The reset going on.
Yes. Anyway, continuing. The Doctor's farewell speech was a bit soppy and wishy-washy. I much preferred Matt Smith's parting words. We'll never forget those words. We are all different people all through our lives, and that's okay, that's good. You've got to keep moving as long as you remember all the people that you used to be. And then the last niggle. The falling of the ring was probably lost on most people. I had to look it up.
Well, so there's a point I just made. I think that was a throwback to the first Doctor's position.
Yeah. More than anything else, I was delighted and excited to see the arrival of the 13th Doctor. Personally, I have no problem with her being female. It's about time, really. But a shame we got such a similar arrival to the Matt Smith arrival, though. Very unoriginal. Really looking forward to the next series. But as I've said before, I'm petrified that the new showrunner hasn't demonstrated the writing skills needed. For now, we must remain optimistic and reserve judgment. But I can't help hearing the TARDIS cloister bell ringing in the distance. Enjoy what is left of Christmas, and I can't wait to see you all in 2018. Best wishes to you all, Josh.
Well, everybody, thank you, Josh.
Everybody's got a bit quiet. Now, Mary. Mary, I'm going to send something to you. because my tongue needs a rest, and you haven't said enough on this show.
Take your pardon.
Oh, no. No, you're not really going to do that to me, are you?
You know, didn't you miss the last few episodes? About time we heard your dulcet tones.
So, to atone for my sins.
Yeah, very good. Atone with your dulcet tones. This is an email from Alan T. Butcher. It should now be in your inbox.
Oh, you are so cruel, Adam. You are so cruel.
Debbie timed her arrival a bit better.
Holy Christmas, this goes on for 3 years.
just before you get to that, ladies and gentlemen, I do need to go.
Okay, mate.
So have a lovely evening, and I'm sure we're all very happy and excited about Jody for next year. And those that aren't, well, they can go. Stick their tarts is where the sun don't shine.
Thank you, Paul. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone. Paul. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Good, Paul.
Bye.
Take care.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Go on then, Mary. Deep breath.
Okay. The Four Doctors threw a glass regeneratively. Dear 20 Megabyters, Twice Upon a Time is, of course, a closely studied multiply reflexive paroxial rendering of two crucial moments sundered by an extraordinary lifetime, but acting as a very effective counterpoint directly to each other. The story contemplates questions of the relative values and potency of mortality, individuality, collaborative action, and continuity into perpetuity.
That's what I was saying.
I hope that made sense to somebody. The framework of the narrative encompasses the gathering of all the memories of all people, placing value on every individual and upon their collection together for the benefit of the future. Putting these two regenerations of the Doctor as the coaxial center of the tale provides the Doctor's choices to be examined from both ends of a life and through the Doctor's extraordinary biology of different lives at the same time. It is a fascinating collection of strands, which may take some time to fully digest and process for its comprehensive intention to be surmised. But the outcome of the tale is clear. Both young and old Doctors overcome their tendency to insist on their narrow individual interests because they recognize their wider consideration of their individual aspirations incorporate their consideration for others. For the first Doctor, this is perhaps a recognition of what he has been learning from his human companions since Totter's Lane, whereas for our current Doctor, it is a rediscovery of these lessons after they have been obscured by the mounting sense of loss that he has suffered over recent lifetimes. It should be noted that although some might suggest that the glass creature's plan...
Andy, can you mute your microphone a minute? You're drowning out Mary.
Jeez, settle down.
Yeah, sorry. Carry on, Mary.
It's okay.
It should be noted that although some might suggest that the glass creature's plan was a little over the top and creepy, albeit not overtly evil, that actually some might say the same about contemporaneous social media. We also learn that Professor Lazarus may well have been a cousin to the Lethbridge Stuarts, considering the very striking family resemblance to his ancestor of the Brigadier. Captain Archibald did have more than one son. All in all, Twice Upon a Time is a moving end to a very self-reflective Doctor and a showrunner who thought very hard about the nature of the show. There is very brave, explicit linkage to the older material, but they pulled off as intelligent and coherent use of the show's rich history. There was a lot in it. There are various meta levels, of course, and has been a concurrent theme in recent times, a heavy insistence that it's going to be okay to really move on. I have not had any problem with the proclivity over the Moffat era for naval contemplation, to which this was a worthy conclusion. However, it would be a welcome move under the new administration to depend more on the great spirit of adventure developed in the early days of the show. It may have been 3.5 minutes too long or too short. I am not sure. Next up, Doctor Who and the Fall, Genesis of a Lady Doctor. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Mary, for your
enjoyed that.
Rather yes, successful.
Very brave there, Mary.
Thank you.
Still no Debbie.
I've gotten three words in and then passed out.
So that rather leaves us with this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Wait, you're damn right.
Now, I haven't got time to explain to incumbents the new rules on the quiz, but we'll just have to go along with it and hope you understand it.
Adam, are we going to have a chance to say what we think about the episode?
We did that earlier.
No,
we didn't.
I know.
No, you're right. No, you're fair, she's right. She didn't.
Yes, we are. But can we do the quiz first?
Yes. I've got to say, Paul was a wise man to leave when he did.
Right. So
where are the other two then, if Paul was one of them?
Pardon?
If Paul was one of the wise men, what's up to the other two then?
That's me and Magic, the other two. Me. Right then.
That's only Kirby, Reese and me have obviously wiped out completely.
Correct. Right then, so everybody has a
the
joke.
Next generation.
Mary, who do you think is going to win?
Kirby.
Andy, who do you think is going to win?
Kirby.
Okay. Kirby, who do you think is going to win?
Matthew.
Not Debbie. It'd be fun if you said that.
Oh, Matthew's so quiet. I forgot he was there.
Matthew, who do you think is going to win?
Probably Kirby, to be honest.
Okay. And Reese, who do you think is going to win?
Magic.
No, that'd be silly.
Magic, Reese, like it.
Go on then, Reese.
Oh, God, I hate this. Can I say myself?
Yeah, you can say yourself. You're in. Right then.
I'll go for myself because I know I could just play it safe because I'm not going to win and then I don't think that'll influence the end so I won't be as pissed off.
Mary, who do you think is going to be last?
Timothy.
Me.
Andy, who do you think is going to be last?
Me.
I'm sure what self-esteem is.
Kirby, who do you think is going to be last?
I was just seeing me watch it last night. So I'm watching it again today, and I can hardly remember any of it. It's like, did that really happen?
Points,
so yeah,
you don't get points deducted for poor excuses. Right then, Kirby, who do you think is going to be last?
Mary.
She's laughing. Matthew, who do you think is going to be
wise
last?
Wise man.
Andy.
Yeah, wise man, Matthew.
And Reese, who do you think is going to be last?
You.
Can't be me, I'm not in it, you daft man.
Just because you added these rules, I don't like these rules.
They're great fun, you'll love them, especially if you win. Who do you think is going to be last?
Me.
Can't be you, can't have your say. You have to pick somebody else, you've already chosen yourself for winning.
I know, but I expect myself to be last. I hope I'm...
So who?
I'm just going to go at random...
Me.
Okay, you.
Thank you. You won't regret that.
Tactics there from Andy. And remember, everybody, you have one joker each to play throughout the game. The first question goes to Mary, and it is this. What words appear on the screen at the beginning I'll start that again.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
what
I
words appeared on the screen as the episode opened?
I also know.
From previous episodes or something like that.
I'll give you a point. It's not exactly what was on there.
709 episodes ago.
No, that's wrong. So that's 1 point in the bonus spot.
What?
No, the answer is previously on Doctor Who.
Previously.
You said the word previously, which got you the point.
Oh, yes.
There. Right, then. The next question goes to Andy.
Oh, right. Okay, go on. Let's get over it.
How many episodes ago was the 10th planet?
Can I play my joke here? Say 709, according to what it's ever been.
Can I get a Master? Bonus point for predicting the answer before you ask the question?
Master?
Yes, Kirby.
I object to the question.
Why?
Because want to get... 709 episodes ago was just to the last episode of the 10th planet.
Okay. Shut up. Kirby. Debbie's online. She's timed that rather well. We're added to the quiz. Because we're not at the end of the... Right, hang on. I've got to fit her in somewhere. That's what she said.
Well,
that could change all of our predictions.
Yeah, do you want to start again then?
No.
Okay. No. I'll leave your predictions as they are. This is a twist to the game. I've got to dial her in as well. Magic's trying not to throw up at the moment, which is, I mean, I've got a mess to clear up, which has been a right twat. Right, add people. Debbie Melrose. No, sorry. Sit down, you stupid dog. Stop panting.
Sorry.
I am sitting.
Stop flopping your ears.
Hello?
Sorry.
Hello. Oh, switch that camera off. I'm struggling with bandwidth.
The camera, Deb.
Thank you. That's better. Hello, Debbie.
Hello.
Did you have a nice birthday?
Hello. I can't see you, Isla. Stop posing.
did you have a nice birthday?
Yes, thank you very much. It was lovely.
Right. Got some good news and bad news for you. The good news is that Mary's read the feedback from Alan T. Butcher.
The interminable feedback.
Also, we haven't talked about what we thought of the story yet.
Okay.
The bad news is the quiz has started and it's nearly your turn and you need to choose. We've got Mary, Andy, Kirby, Matthew and Reese. You've got to choose who you think's going to win.
Who I think's going to win?
Yeah.
Matthew.
And who do you think's going to lose?
Me.
Debbie.
Me.
Debbie.
Yeah.
Who do you think's going to be last?
No one say me.
I'll go for me. I've just come in from Star Wars. I'm a bit bouncy.
Oh. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Fantastic.
So you have you are at a slight disadvantage, Debbie, because we've had a handful of questions and you could have picked up points from them. But never mind. Andy's just picked up 4 points from playing his Joker. So we're now moving to Kirby, whose question is this: what was the captain's first word?
Oh, great.
I
know. I don't know.
Oh, therefore we play this. And hang on, I'll just put that in there. And Reese knows.
Hello?
Yay!
Yay!
Oh.
Right. Matthew.
Yes.
When and where was the captain supposed to die?
Oh,
I know.
Yeps, France, 1914.
Yes. Vipers. It's Wipers.
I don't speak French.
It's not Wipers. It's Eep.
It's Eep.
I know it's not.
Shut up. He got it right. Shut up. Debbie. Debbie.
Tomato.
Debbie. Oh, Debbie.
Debbie.
No, Debbie.
Yeah, hello.
Right. Right. Okay, this is your question. What level civilization was Earth?
Joker level 5.
That's a good start, Deb.
I think it was just level 5, not Joker level 5. I don't remember that line.
I'm a Joker level 5.
Right.
Camel is.
Hang on. Did you play... Oh, Matthew didn't play a Joker, did he?
I played mine.
Matthew, you didn't play your Joker, did you? No, you didn't. You should have done. That's the point. Reese.
Yes. Oh, God.
Right. What was the 12th Doctor's job to the first? So what job did the 12th Doctor have for the first Doctor, if that makes sense?
I don't know.
Pass it on.
Oh, good. We'll do a... And we'll put a point in the bonus ports, which makes it 3. And is it Kirby said I know first?
Yes.
Go on in, Kirby.
His nurse.
Oh, okay, yes. Now that does make sense. Yeah, fair enough.
Right, so there's 3 points in the bonus pot. Anybody, obviously, call in with your name if you know the answer to this question. What did the 12th Doctor say to the last 1,500 years? Well, I say that again. What did the 12th Doctor say the last 1,500 years were?
I know.
Kirby.
It's been rock and roll. Oh, darn, Joker. Darn, it's been rock
too
and
late.
Roll.
Can't play Joker until after. It was a good try, though. Kirby. Right, that's the correct answer. Right then, so the scores are: in last place with 1 point each, it's Reese and Mary. In second place,
you to go for me
with 2 points with Matthew, and in the joint lead, Andy, Kirby, and Debbie all with 4 points each.
Blimey.
Yes. Kirby hasn't played his Joker yet, though, and he's got 4 points, so he has
a
slight advantage. Right then, Mary.
Yes.
Right, what was not a restaurant for the French?
I know.
Oh, I don't remember. Pass it on.
Who said I know first?
I think it might have been Andy.
I got
there
first, yeah.
Going in, Andy. Yeah. Andy?
It was the interior of the 12th Doctor's TARDIS.
Exactly.
is the correct answer. Right.
Not exactly. The flight deck of the most.
Yeah,
powerful.
He's talking about the console.
Oh,
Ramon. Shut up, Kirby.
Shut up, Kirby, for goodness sake.
Right, Andy.
Yes.
How was the Doctor known to the testimony?
I think I do too.
No.
Okay, well, I think Grease said I know first.
Yes.
I think I did. Yes, the Doctor of War.
Doctor of War.
Is the correct answer. Right then.
War.
Right, so the next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
What is not possible according to the testimony? Won't get this one.
I think I know.
Oh.
What is not
possible according to the testimony? What is not possible?
Not possible.
Yes.
I know too.
Oh, okay. I think I know.
Go on,
Joker.
In. Yeah.
Escape is not possible.
1 minute he just does, next minute he doesn't. For goodness sake. Right, is the correct answer. Right then.
You were trying to confuse me.
No, I wasn't. You confused yourself, Matthew.
Yes.
Who was the Doctor the Butcher of?
Oh, man.
Oh, I know.
God, I can't. I get part of it, but not all of it. Skull something.
Ooh.
Ooh, so close.
I'm going to give you a point for that. But there was another part.
Kirby can come up with the rest, I'm sure.
Going in, Kirby. Is it him that's got the...
Butcher of Skull Moon.
Is the correct answer. So you get another point. You get points for that as well. Well done. Well done. Right then. Debbie.
I have to answer the phone, so hang on. Sorry.
Tough. Right, Debbie.
Yeah.
Right. What did the Doctor call Bill when they escaped from the testimony?
Yeah, speaking. Hang on. I've got to figure out how to mute this microphone, but I'm on a podcast right now.
Bill.
Hang on.
Sorry, Debbie. I didn't catch that.
What do you think the Doctor called Bill then, Isla? Because I have no idea.
A fake.
A fake, Isla says.
Right, so that is a...
Wrong, I'm afraid, Isla.
Wrong, yes. Anybody?
Let me step
away. Can I try a copy?
Guys, I'm going to step away for a second.
Okay.
Three. No, there's not a copy either. The answer was Mary Berry.
Lord, no, he called...
Right. No, he was, yes.
He called the first Doctor
Mary Berry.
Yeah.
What did the Doctor call...
He called the first Doctor Mary Berry because of his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll scrap that question. Sorry, Kirby put me off.
That was my question.
Hang on, I'll change that.
I'm back.
Okay, right then. Oh, good. Front and sides front too. And right, sides. Debbie, was it your question? Yeah. Right, forget that last one. That was a bit of a cock-up on my part. What was Bill's observation...
What did I miss?
Shut up. What was Bill's... Nothing. What was Bill's observation of the first Doctor's TARDIS?
The windows were smaller.
Not exactly.
Shut up!
Oh, stop it.
Right, Reese.
A bit smaller then.
Yes.
What had lovely blinking lights?
What had lovely blinking lights? Good question, Adam. I don't know.
No, good. Right.
Oh, I think I know.
Go on in.
The astral navigator.
I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one. It's actually the Astro Map.
Somebody just rang my doorbell.
It's not exactly. It's the Astro Map.
Yes, what we just said that. It was near enough. Good grief.
All of these are just not exactly.
Shut up. Bonus pot question. Someone has just gone to answer the door. I think Matthew did, didn't he?
Yes, Matthew did.
Oh, well, never mind. Right.
I missed something.
You didn't miss anything, Kirby.
Kirby, don't worry, you missed a wrong question.
You didn't miss anything. Right, this question then. Bonus pot, 3 points for this. It's, what was the weapon forges of Villengard once known as? What was the weapon forges of Villengard once known as?
I know.
Go on, Em.
The Nightmare of the Seven Galaxies.
That's
not
you,
exactly.
That is.
I bet you...
What was that?
I just said not exactly. I'm calling you.
Genius.
Well said.
Point there for raised for comedy reasons.
Actually, they were the weapons. Weapons something else in the previous.
Shut up! Right. Current scores in last place with 1 point is Mary. In fifth place with 3 points, it's Reese. In fourth place with 4 points, it's Matthew. In third place with 5 points, it's Andy. In second place with 6 points, it's Debbie. And then the lead of 12 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes to Mary. Where am I with this now? All right. What creature attacks a captain by fastening itself to his face?
We all know that.
Shut up. Mary?
I'll use my joker for good for ill. Isn't it one of the Daleks?
Yay!
Yay!
I thought it was a face hugger.
that's what I was thinking at first.
Andy.
It was the alien.
Andy. Yes.
Master.
Yes.
Yeah, the weapon forges of Villengard were the weapon factories of Villengard in The Doctor Dances.
Shut up. Andy.
Lally, no.
Andy.
Where is Andy.
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 Wakey.
Right.
Shut up, Isla.
Oh, it hasn't turned into Kirby, has she? Right.
Not right. Yet.
Okay, well, Andy's missed out on his question because he's obviously gone to answer the door or something. Kirby.
Master.
You get the question instead.
Okay.
What insult did Bill level at the Doctor?
I know.
I don't remember.
And Reese knows.
Don't take offense, Ed. Don't take offense, Adam, but you arse. You bloody arse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll give you that one, yeah. That's worse.
I don't know, Reese. That's enough for a point. Exactly.
No, I don't remember the bloody part.
Exactly. He actually said, stupid. Shush. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shush.
Oh, Andy can hear us. He just messaged us on Facebook, but...
Did you turn off your microphone, Andy?
Shush, everybody. The answer was stupid bloody ass, but that was near enough. Right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Right. So who's that question for? Kirby, wasn't it?
That was me.
Kirby. Right. Is Andy back yet?
I don't know. Andy, did you mute your microphone?
Well, I'll leave one in the bag for him later. Matthew, is he still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hey! Right, Matthew, there's one for you.
Okay.
Why did the first Doctor refuse to regenerate?
I know.
Joker.
Yeah. That's Andy fiddling. Yeah, we can hear you now, Andy.
Andy must be back. I can tell.
My head is packed up. I'm now on the hands-free microphone. Can you hear me? I can hear you for long.
Yes, thank you. Right. Whose question was this for? Matthew. Matthew, sorry. Please give an answer.
Mm-hmm. Because he was afraid.
Could have played your Joker then, too.
He did play his Joker.
I did.
Oh, I didn't hear that bit because of
he did.
Andy's sort of
we all will say he
shut
did.
Up because of Andy's microphone issues. Right, Andy.
So say we all.
Right, this is your question then.
Okay, can you hear me okay now?
Yes, right. This is your question.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Andy. Plugging
back in again.
Andy. Andy. Jesus Christ, Andy.
I don't know what's happened. I'm now hands free again. I can hear you all.
Well, shut up and listen to the question then. Why did the first Doctor refuse to... I've done that one. Christ's sake, right. Complete the Doctor's statement. Up an atom, blank, blank...
I didn't hear that, so say it again, please.
Right. Complete the Doctor's statement. Up an atom, blank, blank.
It's the Dad's Army reference. I can't think... It's a quote from Dad's Army. Kirby, take it. I can't remember. It's a quote from Dad's
Go
Army.
Go on in, Kirby.
I saw these on Wikipedia.
Never mind where you saw them. Just give me the bloody answer, for goodness sake.
Corporal Jones, because I didn't understand what it was.
Hurrah!
Dad's Army, yes.
Right.
Think of it.
Debbie.
Yes.
Help. Right. Who's that?
That was my fault.
Oh, okay.
My fault.
Right.
Put my glasses back on.
Oh, good. Debbie, this is your question.
Yeah.
Who?
Debbie! God's sake!
Debbie.
Why is it good, not a practical survival strategy? What does that mean?
Why? What?
That surely is written down wrong.
Oh.
Why is? Oh yeah. Why? Please listen. Why is? Shut up. Why is good not a practical survival strategy? God.
I know, but someone else said it first.
This is a 3-point answer. This one.
No help from the Melroses either. Sorry. Nope.
Right. Apparently Kirby knows.
No, someone else said it first.
Oh, somebody else then, please.
I think it was me.
Go on.
Because it requires loyalty, trust.
Yes. No. I'll give him a point. Point for that one.
Love is in there, yeah.
Yeah. No, the answer. Shut up, Kirby. The answer is it requires loyalty, self-sacrifice, and love. Loyalty. Self-sacrifice.
Yeah, it was loyalty, self-sacrifice, and love.
And love, yes.
I forgot the self-sacrifice.
Yes. So, well played, Matthew, but not quite there. Right then. Rhys, you're the only person who hasn't played a Joker.
I know.
You got the point for that one, because it wasn't quite right.
Oh, shut up. I've given bloody points. Shut up. Right. Rhys.
Yes. No.
What was the name of the main glass avatar?
Oh, good grief. I don't know.
We saw up with Rusty. You don't know, right? That makes life a lot easier for me. To give a point for that. Anybody?
I think I know.
Go on in.
Helen Clay.
I would have given you an extra point if you'd said Professor Helen Clay. But yes, that's the correct answer. Right. And there's 4 points in the bonus pot for this question. What year was Testimony founded?
I know.
Go on in.
5,012,000,000,000
is the correct
answer. I knew that one too.
Right, the current scores are.
Million and millions. I've always said that instead of just saying billions.
In last place with 4 points, it's Rhys. In fourth place with 5 points each is Mary and Andy. In third place with 6 points is Debbie. In second place with 13 points is Matthew. And in the lead with 14 points, it's Kirby.
Ooh.
Next crown of questions. Mary.
Yes.
Thank you for clinging on to life. Right. What was Captain's full name?
Oh. I can only remember part of it, so I'll pass.
Right.
I know.
Oh, what a surprise. Kirby knows.
Archibald. I'm going to mispronounce this. I would say Hamish. It's probably Hamish.
Just get on and say it.
Just say it.
Archibald Hamish Lethbridge Stewart.
Ding. Yep. Ding. I can only remember Hamish.
Good grief. Is the correct answer. Right, Andy.
Yep.
What was the first song sung on the battlefield?
It was the German version. It was Still Enough.
Extra point for that, because that's what I wanted. I thought somebody was going to say Silent Night, so that's brilliant. What I'm... Right, Kirby.
I did learn German at school, so yeah.
Kirby,
I learned that one in school too.
Thank you, Master. Kirby. What year was the Christmas armistice?
I know.
1914.
Yeah, everybody knows.
No, I've got to throw a couple of easy ones in there, Matthew.
Yes.
What was the first Doctor's new final words? So what was the first Doctor's new final words, which were different to his original final words?
I guess I'll see the long way round.
That's good enough for me. Oop, darn, I pressed the wrong button. Right, what I've got written down there is, here we go, the long way round, which is similar to what you said, near enough for 2 points. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
What was the hardest thing about knowing the Doctor, according to Bill?
I know too.
Letting go?
Yes.
Rhys.
You knew
that.
Okay. What was the first thing Clara said to the Doctor?
I'm going to play my Joker.
Yep.
Something like...
Hello, say that.
Be quiet.
No, that's why Rhys is going to play his Joker. And the words that Clara said he thinks are, hello, you stupid old man. Okay.
Right, who says I know that one? Hello, anybody?
No one.
Anybody?
Wasn't it Hello, You Stupid Old Man?
No, it wasn't. It was Merry Christmas, Doctor. So.
Oh!
Right.
Oh.
Okay, bonus pot. 6 points in the bonus pot for this question. Shut up. So, the question in the bonus pot is, what was the last thing Nardole said to the Doctor? We've gone quiet again.
I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Hug.
Oh, what a shame.
No.
Bollocks.
Anyway.
That wasn't that either.
It was cuddle.
Oh!
I'm just stuck on these glass nipples.
It's the same, Mario.
Oh, dear, that was funny.
It's the same thing.
Oh, dear. Bollocks.
It's fine, Isla, it's fine.
So it's a Sex Pistols album title. Right, so the Russian scores ball. Are, with the last rounds of questions about to arrive. In last place with 4 points, Reese. In fourth place. Hang on, we're getting confused. I think it's fifth place with 5 points, Mary. Fourth place with 8 points, Debbie and Andy. In second place with 15 points, Matthew. And in the lead with 23 points, it's Kirby. And there are... How many are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of you.
That means I will lose. Oh, well.
And how many questions? We've got enough. Oh, no, we've got enough questions. These are all free-for-alls, then. Here we go. Free-for-all question number one. What is saving the universe to the Doctor? Oh, dear. Well, nobody seems to know that one. No.
That wasn't an answer.
No. Treadmill was the answer to that one.
Ah, right.
Treadmill. What was that?
Treadmill.
A treadmill.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, next bonus. Sorry, free-for-all question is this. What sounded after the Doctor said, well, accept me?
I think I like the cloister bell.
Oh, dear. That's correct. Right. Next question. 12th Doctor's last words were...
Doctor, I let you go.
I know, we're all crying.
Penultimate. Oh, no. Yes, penultimate question is, 13th Doctor's first words were...
Oh, no, brilliant. Oh,
brilliant.
Oh, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Well, give it to Andy. Even though it was actually brilliant, but brilliant was in there.
For dramatic effect. I should have just said it.
You should have given it to all of us.
No, I shouldn't, yeah, Kirby.
I think everybody got that, to be honest.
No, yeah, but the idea is the person that gets it first gets the points. Andy got it. Right, last question. And I think I know who's going to get this one. What message flashed onto the monitor screen after the Doctor pressed the button on the console?
System's critical.
Not near enough for me. Nope. I'll give you a point, though, actually, Matthew. Just a point. It's not anywhere near. Well, it's near, but not... I'm being generous today because it's Christmas. Nope. Anybody want to be a bit more accurate? Would anybody like to be a bit more accurate?
I tried to freeze frame it, so I couldn't get it. Sorry. Okay.
Well, therefore, that's the end.
That's a no.
So, the actual message was, system crisis, multiple operations failure. Failures. Oh, okay. Sorry. So, the final scores before the adjustments are, in last place with 4 points, Reese, in fifth place with 5 points, Mary, in fourth place with 8 points, Debbie, in third place with 12 points, Andy, in second place with 18 points, Matthew, and then the lead with 23 points, it's Kirby. Right, so Mary predicted Kirby to be ahead, and did rather well there, so doubles her score 10, and she predicted herself to be on the bottom, which unfortunately... didn't do much else.
Told you all to pick me.
Andy predicted Kirby to be ahead. Good going. And Andy to be at the bottom. Oh dear. Kirby predicted Matthew to be ahead. And Mary to be on the bottom. Matthew predicted Kirby to be ahead. Oh, that was pretty good going, I suppose. And Andy to be on the bottom. He was on the bottom of the race, wasn't it? So that was pretty rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
And Debbie predicted Matthew to be ahead, which didn't do much for her. And herself
it
to be on the bottom.
Been the way it...
And Reese predicted Reese to be ahead. And Andy to be on the bottom. So the final scores for the Christmas edition, and have never had so many players in the quiz at one time, it's unbelievable, is In last place with 4 points, it's Reese. In fifth place with 8 points, it's Debbie. In fourth place with 10 points, Mary. In second place with 23 points. Sorry, third place with 23 points, Kirby. Second place with 24 points is Andy. And the winner this week with 36 points, just for one guest appearance on the show, it's Matthew.
Yay! Yay!
Now, we've saved the what we thought of the episode to last because, one, I forgot about it, and two, it benefits Debbie to actually have some major input into the show. So we normally start with what I think of it, and that's exactly what we can do. We actually heard what Paul thought about it earlier because he made it quite clear, so it does help. Now, I actually thoroughly enjoyed this episode. It wasn't perfect. I think I've outlined the things that I found that weren't perfect about it. And they did have similarities. I think he's basically episodes he's cocked up in the past. He's actually sort of redone and improved on. He does what Moffitt does. He sort of reuses his previous ideas. And sometimes he does that and it works. Sometimes he does that and it doesn't. This time it did work. I enjoyed the revamp of the first Doctor. I enjoyed the interaction between the Doctors. I loved seeing all the 12th Doctor's companions come back for a little cameo, and especially Clara, because obviously about 5 seconds of Clara, I think anybody who doesn't like her, that's quite acceptable. But it was an hour. I was watching the clock. Oh, how are they going to compact all this into an hour? Because normally Christmas specials are a bit longer. But I think, Paul said nothing happened. What happened to me is just an enjoyable Christmas romp that didn't harp on about Christmas for the whole episode. It was all about the Doctor and how he's going to move forward. And
so you mean that they sang Silent Night on that historic night?
Yeah, I love that
Christmas episode.
That was just a reference to Christmas. Yes. And that's perfect for me. It
happened on Christmas, therefore it's a Christmas episode.
Yeah, and it's on Christmas Day, but they didn't hark on about Christmas. There was a reference to it, which, and obviously with Clara saying Merry Christmas, Doctor, because they were actually on Christmas Day at the time, but they didn't go on, Christmas this, Christmas that, throughout the whole thing, and they didn't try and just have snow falling all the time, apart from the fact they were at the South Pole, you know, because that was where snow is, you know. So all in all, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was really good fun, and I agree with some of the feedback we've had that it's one of the best Christmas specials we've had.
Yes.
And totally engrossing too.
If you recall, we had an Easter episode that only mentioned Easter once.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so I'm going to do my list that was in the quiz for people to talk in order to keep it fair. Mary, what did you think?
Thank you.
All right, we'll save it to last. We'll do it the other way around. Reese, what did you think?
Oh, gosh, okay. Well, I loved it overall. I think... Okay, this is going to be more of a talk about Moffat's era as well as the episode, because I think you're right. He does use a lot of the same elements in all his episodes, and I enjoy his writing, I enjoy his dialogue, I enjoy the themes he reuses, but I just think that it's clearly reaching the end of its time. I mean, literally, he's going, but also it's just gotten a bit same. I still enjoy it, but I think I said this with the return of Dr. Mysterio, where they played up the superhero tones that are out there in Marvel movies now, where you can predict when the punchline for a joke is going to be, and I can kind of predict when Stephen Moffat's going to make one of the characters have a dramatic speech, and then when it's going to switch to a bit of tension and an alien chasing them, and then it's going to be joke time, and then it's going to be another dramatic speech. I could kind of predict when that's going to happen. Not saying I don't enjoy the writing and the words he puts in there, or the performances of the actors when they deliver it, but it just got to the point where I was like, yep, here we go. There's another moment of tension, and then you release it. And then, so it got predictable. So Doctor Who being about change, it was time for Stephen to go. I think Capaldi could have stayed a bit longer, but he's going, and it's bringing in a very welcome change that could spice things up really well. That's the whole era I'm talking about. But the episode itself, I thought, in terms of what Paul said, nothing much happened, but it didn't need to happen, per se. I think the great thing about it was
And there's a funny moment where the Doctor was annoyed that there was no arch-villain, because he says he doesn't know what to do when there's no arch-villain. But I think it was just kind of a love letter to Doctor Who, which I think I actually have seen enough of since the 50th anniversary. It feels like every season has been a bit of one. Or series. I'm being generous. It's Christmas. but yes, I think that... where was I going with that? Oh, yeah, it was a love letter to Doctor Who. It was kind of... There was a lack of threat, per se, but it was more about having the first Doctor see the current last Doctor until the third one came along. I mean, the 13th one came along. And that was such a touching, beautiful thing, and the fact that they were both going through this struggling with regeneration because the first Doctor was about to regenerate for the first time, and then it was a lovely analysis of this character who's been traveling time and space for thousands of years, saying that he's tired of running on the treadmill, which is why my theory earlier about why the TARDIS has now made the Doctor a woman was to give him a new lease of life and be fascinated that he's a woman now, which is why she said, oh, brilliant. I do have to say that I think Rachel Talalay, is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah,
I think she is television's greatest director right now, because I watch Arrow and all the spin-offs for those shows, and whenever she directs it, it's just a much better paced, much better looking episode. And this is certainly the same for Doctor Who. She's an amazing director. And I love little things like when Bradley, when he collapsed, and then they cut back to the Hartnell footage. That's something I'll say. He was phenomenal. I actually did believe I was watching William Hartnell. But when it cut back to the footage of Hartnell and it went all black and white and grainy, then it cut to Capaldi sitting on the battlefield kind of contemplating things. The focus was on the snow as it was flying across the screen, and it looked like the grain of the film continued, and then it focused on Capaldi and it went back to very slick modern looking filming. And it's just attention to detail like that that Rachel has, that is phenomenal work. I adore her work.
Okay.
And the acting all around was fantastic, and I said it earlier, unfortunately I haven't seen much of season or series 10, and I'm very much looking forward to it because Bill is phenomenal and I like Pearl Mackie a lot.
Now you've been spoiled. She turns into a Cyberman.
I was spoiled when it came out. It was hard to avoid that.
Can I make a comment on a couple of things you said?
You may.
First, nothing bad. I get to meet Rachel Talalay in May at Wholanta.
Hooray! Fantastic.
That's gonna be cool. And what was the other thing that you had brought? Oh, yeah. It looked very authentic because they found one of the original varieties of cameras that they were using.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, great.
Brilliant. Thank you, Kirby.
That's all I had to say for that.
Okay, right. Can we move on?
Until my turn comes.
Yes, right. Matthew, what did you think?
I loved it.
Well, I've actually written a full review of this up already up on Futurism, which for those following the 20 megabyte page will see that I just dropped a link to it in the live streaming version of this, and I'll be posting a link later. But I'll just try to do a quick summarization of my thoughts. I think it's the best Christmas special we've had since 2012 with the Snowman, which I think remains my favorite. And I think it's the best regeneration story we've had since Eccleston left. I think the New Who's forte has not been regenerations. You know, we've ended up with overblown messes in the past of things like End of Time or Time of the Doctor, you know, as well, which was just totally all over the place. And I think that the smart thing that Moffat did here was he sort of went, you know what, I'm going to do this as a very simple story. I'm going to pare it down. It's a runaround is what it is, plain and simple. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But it works to those strengths. It's a very, perhaps appropriately enough, something that's the end of an era. I think it's very sort of self-reflective. And it's surprised then that it's going back to that very first regeneration. And you end up with basically two old men sort of raging against the dying of the light, as it were. But, I think it works for what it is. It's a very, you know, it could have been sort of very sort of dark and depressing and, oh, my God, it's the end of an era and I'm going to die again and I don't want to go, et cetera. But at the end of it, I think it's a very sort of life-affirming special, and it's sort of built for hope for the future, especially after it spends an hour looking back to the past, both recently and 709 episodes ago.
Yeah.
So I think it works for what it is and may well be my new favorite Christmas special. David Bradley, I think, does a good job of sort of capturing Hartnell's first Doctor, though the script from Moffat does way overplay the sort of sexism and whatnot, which was there to an extent, but not to the sheer volume of it that they just keep throwing on in this. Yeah. And it is a joke that kind of wears thin after a while for me. But I love all the callbacks to the past, the fact that we got to see sort of these scenes that we've had lost since the 1970s from, 10th Planet Part 4. And I felt that that was all well done. So it was just a really enjoyable experience all around. And if I wasn't already excited for Jodie Whittaker, I would be after that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Mm. Thank you, Matthew. Debbie, what do you think?
It's very hard to follow those two. They know they're onions. Basically, I sat down watching this with target audience Isla, obviously, who was absolutely ecstatic waiting for Jodie Whittaker to show up and spent the whole episode going, when's he going to regenerate, mummy? And didn't have the same impatience as she did, because I thought it was not a lot happened, but it happened beautifully.
Yes.
And it takes a lot to make me emotional, but that bit when they started singing Still an Act, I was in bits. I was completely broken by that point, because I don't want Capaldi to go. And the first Doctor is...
I don't want him to go.
And I was so into it, and I was so ecstatic, and Clara turned up.
Yeah.
Completely every emotion that I'd had about Bill being there, about this big goodbye, being
nothing wrong with Clara. Shush.
No, the pace completely changed when she showed up. It was like, oh, hang on a minute, let's just shoehorn Jenna Coleman in for 5 seconds. And it felt like that. They could have done that so much better. Maybe if they really wanted to bring her into it, maybe have her be the person that turned up as the memory rather than Bill Potts, Why did they shoehorn her in at the end like they did?
Because she was filming Victoria at the time. She didn't have enough time.
It's also like they did it with Karen Gillan as well, right at the end of Matt Smith's tenure. It's like just a quick brief, hello, I was your first companion here, that sort of thing. And I don't like long goodbyes, but I don't like sort of shoehorning things in at the end as well, because it was pretty, the way it was shot was beautiful, and just the emotions in it, just the way that they bounced off each other was fantastic. David Bradley is amazing. I'm looking forward to listening to all these Big Finish that I've got lined up ready to listen to basically as soon as Isla's gone to bed. And she's left the room. She's actually brushing her teeth now, but she was ecstatic about it. And she didn't understand why Mummy was crying when the people were singing, Silent Night. But hopefully she will start to realise why that's important. And I thought that was absolutely lovely to sort of show that to the target audience, because a lot of people Isla's age aren't even aware of that. They're aware of Remembrance Sunday. They're aware of things like that. But they're not aware of that sort of thing, the humanity in war. And that's what this was really all about, because it was all about the Doctor of War, the World War, the Great War, that sort of thing. It was all about war, but the peace that you could find. And that's what it seemed to just sum up, the fact that this was just a beautifully packaged way of the Doctor finding peace with where he is.
Yes.
And then, here you go. Let's try being a woman. I am so excited to find out what happens.
Oh, thank you, Debbie.
There she is.
Sorry about that.
Well, Andy, what did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of people say they've got no plot. I mean, having rewatched it, I think the whole point is it's more of a mental thinking story. So I think there is a lot of plot there. But I think the way that the two doctors, neither of them wanted to let go, and then obviously the first doctor didn't really understand what's going to happen. The 12th doctor did, because he'd been through it so many times. But I thought that was really good. And it's the Lethbridge Stewart thing I didn't see coming. Some people said they did. So I think that's a good one as well. And it's interesting, is he the doctor's, not the doctor's, the Brigadier's grandfather, or I think as somebody said, his great uncle, I think is where it is. So that I didn't see that coming. But the Christmas Truce is a wonderful homage to Christmas, given the fact that, that is something that's so poignant.
Do you know what it reminded me of, Andy? It reminded me of the Pipes of Peace video that Paul McCartney did many years ago.
Yes. it's just that, but I thought that's really, really poignant way of doing it, the way they all came together. And of course, you know, did he actually die or not? He didn't do. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's been set up so well. What I can't believe is people have said they don't like Jodie Whittaker's first scene. Hang on, she's on for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Can you just get a light, please? Can you, if you don't...
No, I think what people were referencing there, Andy, was not that they didn't like her first scene, that they haven't liked what she's previously done, the parts she's had to play prior to being the Doctor, because they can't see anything of the Doctor in those parts, simply because she wasn't playing the Doctor. I mean, you could say that about a lot of actors that went on to play the Doctor.
No woman's played the Doctor yet, so goodness knows what we're supposed to, we're supposed to see. But I think all the naysayers, sorry, I mean, there's one of the former presenters who I've had a bit of an argument on Facebook with about this. You know, for goodness sake, let's see what the season, at the end of the season, to work out, then fine, they'll let her go. But can we let her see what she can do first before we get judgmental? Because that's a sure
people and Chibnall for that matter. And
I thoroughly enjoyed it. End of day.
So let's see what Jodie can do. Let's see what Chibnall can do, and let's give a good old Bradley Walsh a chance too. Because I'm pretty sure he's going to be fab. Thank you, Andy.
I'm very excited for all of them. Actually,
thank you very much. We've got to play this tune.
Wait.
Sit back and enjoy. It's Mary Lang.
Not me.
Oh no, hang on, Mary, hang on, rewind.
Okay.
How could we forget the reason why I nearly forgot Kirby? Listen, the reason why I nearly forgot Kirby, because he's made so many comments, I felt like I already knew what he felt of the story. I've got a funny, I loved it is going to be in this sentence. Go on then, Kirby.
I liked it.
All right, not exactly. On to the next one.
I'm going to be short because everyone said so many things that I've already... that I agree with. I believe it or not, I liked it better the first time around than the second time, because I started to see the flaws the second time, and where it was pure emotion.
Is that because of the camera angle? Is it pointing downwards? Or?
Right. I was kind of weeping a little bit towards the end of watching it last night.
Only a little bit.
But it was very good. I'm gonna have to think about. I liked last year. I liked Dr. Mysterio, but I like this a little bit better. I just had a few. Like I said before, I didn't like the Dark Water similarity.
Yeah.
And I kind of some of the setup I disagreed with, the whole business about. The Christmas truce. I was not expecting that.
No, either.
And that was just so marvelous. If you'll recall, a year ago, I visited the World War One Museum in Kansas City. And that was quite a moving place to visit. And it's just... I liked it. I liked this particular story very, very much. Not loved, liked.
Thank you. Kirby.
I'm just going to quickly do a bit of a Kirby and add a little comment to that.
Yes.
There was something that I loved. It ties into the whole story about Mark Gatiss being quite subtle and marvelous this time around, but his story was excellent. Like when the Doctor kind of casually just described him wearing World War One clothes, and then he got hooked up on the fact that there was another World War, and just how shocking that must have been to think that he was about to die in the trenches, and then suddenly there's going to be another war. And that's how impactful time travel can be. And that's when Stephen Moffat does emotion well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That really worked.
Yeah.
I have a couple more things just dealing with the other people in this house who are somewhat Doctor Who fans. Julia, the geek, refuses to watch it because she completely disliked the last half of Series 10. And decided she'll never watch Doctor Who again.
Oh, I bet she does.
Until next year.
And I think that she'll like this particular story when she gets around to watching it. I'm going to try to drag her. If I manage to get to the theater tomorrow night, I'll try to see if she'll come along with me, although she probably won't. We're going to Augusta, Georgia tomorrow to look at apartments for her. So I don't know if we're going to get back in time for me to go to the theater.
Well, there is a show on Thursday as well.
I know, but I wanted to go see it with the Hulanta people.
Ah.
I'd rather see it in a crowd, a positive crowd, than see it just kind of, I'm the only person who's an extreme fan in the theater. I did that once and it wasn't all that great. And let's see. Fred has not seen it yet. Probably tonight, maybe in the next couple of days. I know she will love it because she is such a fan of the Brigadier. And when she, I'm not going to spoil that for her. She's just going to flip when she gets that little bit. My youngest, Mary, will probably watch it once she starts to watch for Jodie Whittaker, because I know she said she's going to start watching, at least try to watch, with the new Doctor. Good. She has not seen a single bit of Capaldi.
Fool. Right. Thank you, Gabby. Yes. Right then. Sorry, Mary, but this is for real this time.
Third time's the charm, huh?
Good luck.
Mo.
Oh.
What's happened?
Just get her off.
That'd be funny if she suddenly disappeared and just as the moment arrived.
Yeah.
Oh. The moment has been prepared for.
I just did play the music.
I just did.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm sorry. I thought I was waiting for my cue.
Waiting for my cue, Mr. Griffith.
Do it again if you like.
Okay. I felt this episode was very typical of the entire Capaldi Moffat era and
Capaldi.
The part of the Matt Smith era, where to Paul and Reese's points, you know, no excitement, no adventure, no real threat. So like Isla, I was sitting there, you know, tapping fingers waiting for, okay, when is the regeneration going to happen? When is it going to happen? You know, it's like, we're dragging this thing out. I want to see the regeneration. And I felt that to make it a Christmas episode, they stuck in that whole thing about the Christmas 1914, the Silent Night, which for me was the best part of the whole episode. And there was a movie made about this called Silent Night, and it was very moving. I loved that. And I think that they did a really good job with it in this episode. And there were a lot of witty lines, you know, but as Paul and Reese have talked about, you know, there's this anticipation of something's really going to happen, and then it all dissipates. Nothing really happens. And I think that Moffat may not have been able to come up with a really good monster during the Capaldi time. So he came up with what he must have thought was the most threatening monster any of us faces, and that is death, dying, and the life beyond death. Because that theme has been there from the very first Capaldi episode right through to this one. We're always dealing with the afterlife, with people dying but coming back, but you know, no other really terrible monsters, you know. So I think he thought death was probably the way where he was going to go with it, and that's what we have had from the beginning to the end. And so I'm tired of it. Anyway, when more people started coming back from the dead, or when, you know, the testimony was, you know, you are in the hall of the dead, I thought, oh, here we are again. So mostly I was kind of bored, except for the Christmas part and waiting for the regeneration. The regeneration I thought was wonderful. I think that Jodie Whittaker, she looked wonderful doing what she did. You know, the point of people who don't like what she's done before. I haven't been too crazy about her parts before, but her face right after the regeneration was so full of excitement and everything I'm looking for that I am anticipating a good run with her as the next Doctor.
Thank you, Mary. Well,
I'm guys. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm going to have to go. Ida's having a bit of a meltdown about me not reading to her, so I'm sorry to just pop in and pop off. So
well, Happy New Happy Year, Christmas. My darling.
I'm going to need to go too.
Yes, I'm just going to finish up now. Thank you, darling.
Bye.
Bye, Debbie.
So just want to quickly touch on a couple of things before we go, and it is going to be very brief. Our sponsors, whowon.co.uk, if anybody listens
to whowon.co.uk?
If anyone listened to last week's show will know that I've managed to talk them into going to the Isle of Wight Comic Con, so anybody... obviously, listeners want to get tickets for the Isle of Wight Comic Con.
And you are going to be meeting a lot of fantastic people at that.
Yes.
I love that guest list.
Yes, well, the latest is Sean Aston, who is quite well known to quite a few people.
He's pretty good,
quite excited about meeting him. Especially he's in one of my favourite films, which is a film called Click with Adam Sandler, and it's a fantastic film. A very funny film. Apart from that, Who Won are going to be there as well. And Lavazzi are absolutely delighted to see lots of people have been given Doctor Who scarves for Christmas this year. So they are, both of those are continuing to sponsor us into 2018. So thank you to Who Won and thank you to Lavazzi. And thank you to everybody for appearing on the show this week. It's been great fun, although a little bit longer than I anticipated. But our next proper show, despite the people who can't make it, is on the 7th of January, where we will be reviewing, finally, the Ark in Space. There may be an inserted show between now and then, depends on how busy I am, really. But because there's no more shows until the new year, I have to say to everybody, Happy New Year. Thank you for supporting the show during 2017, and I hope that continues yonder into the new year. Have a great time, and thank you everybody for being on the show this week. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, Fancy Pants.
Bye, everyone. Happy New Year.
So long. So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Thank you, Matthew. Right then, that's it. Thank you, everybody. Oh, Kirby, you stay online.
All right, I'm going to say goodbye. Bye, Reese. It'll be nice to talk to you.
Lovely talking to you, too.
Nice you came aboard.
Yes, good to talk to you, Mary.
Right.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Apart from Kirby.
Now, you were saying you were reviewing Ark in Space?
That's on the 7th of January.
Fantastic. I'll try and be there for that one, too.
Yay!
Yay!
I recorded
you
that bit.
Okay. You can substitute for me.
You contracted. Now it was recorded.
Okay, fair enough. I'll try and get a copy of it and watch it. Although I have seen it. It's a good one.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.